Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
Today we honor the life of the publisher of the Carolina Times, Durham's black newspaper. Kenneth Edmonds died on Saturday at the age of 66. His passing brings attention to a pillar of North Carolina's African-American communities. At its founding, the Carolina Times informed and fueled anti-segregation and black labor movements in the state. Kenny Edmonds carried the family's paper's mission into the 21st century, managing a news outlet for, by, and about black North Carolinians, covering issues often left out of the mainstream white-owned press. To tell us more about his life and legacy, I want to welcome Andre Van back to the program. Andre was a personal friend of Kenny Edmonds and is the archivist for the North Carolina Central University. Andre, welcome back. And my condolences. I know that you were close friends with Kenny, so please accept my condolences.
Yes. Thank you so much, Frank. And thank you for helping to sort of shine a light and help him tell a little bit more about his life. We're so thankful for that.
Well, he was an important member to our whole community and certainly a great loss for all of us, but particularly African-American communities where that paper is so important. Take us back to Kenneth's childhood.
Yes. Kenneth, first, he born in 1953, grew up with two parents who were educators, Mr. Woodrow Edmonds and Miss, of course, Vivian Austin Edmonds, who were educators, but yet grew up in a much wilder and larger family with his grandparents, Mr. Lewis and Stella Austin. And so he had these early remembrances of what Durham was like as he sort of moved about the town with his grandfather, who was editor, of course, Lewis Austin, editor of the Carolina Times. And I think that had a very tremendous impact on his life because it gave him a window into the world in which he saw. You know, they were somewhat privileged because they had they were their own bosses and their own owners, and yet they had a chance to see every day what that work was like. And so I think he really carried that on when he decided to take over that editorship after his mother, and understood, I think, very clearly the very essential work and tie in that his paper had with the community at large. And,
well,
and that's kind of important.
And he started working for that paper at the age of what, 4 or 5?
Yes, at the age of 4 or 5, at the same time that his mother also, you know, as I think his son said it best, he had printer's ink under his nails. And that is so accurate, that is so true, because every little job from as they call the keeper of the keys, on down to first learning in the journalistic style of how to craft an obituary, which, as you know, is one of the last times that someone gets to tell someone's story, on down to that sense of reluctancy, you know, when the opportunity comes after his mother's ill to take over the paper and to move it to that next generation and continue that continuity. And that reluctancy turned into what I think was his life mission and passion, which was to help tell the story of the community, especially African American community, and all of his works and facets.
Yeah, that's interesting because, as you point out, you know, he was reluctant to take over the paper. He'd worked for it on and off, certainly at an early age. His mother was doing a lot of the work. She became ill. Talk about that reluctance and that decision finally to come back and take on the paper.
Yes, yes. Well, Miss Edmonds, you know, experienced in the 80s a little health challenge and setback. And so it sort of fell upon Kenneth to sort of take on the paper and what he called, you know, the day to day. And he thought was going to be just for, you know, just a few months I'm sure, you know, she'll be back in place. And so what happened, she needed a little further assistance there, and so he recognized that that duty, that was a shift, and that a change, you know, had come under her supervision, of course. And he was quite pleased to have those blessings from her because she stayed right there with him even until the end, even after her years of editorship was over. She was right there with him. You can find her, as I used to find her there, along with him working there. And so that says a lot about, you know, the idea of a small family shop of those working together, understanding the necessity and importance of telling these community stories that otherwise may not be told in other venues.
Well, tell us more about that, because that ultimately, as you suggest here, is the reason that he went from not maybe wanting to do this to a sense of responsibility. How important is that paper? How important was it to the community?
The Carolina Times, or as we call it in the community, the Times, is by far and has been one of the most effective and important newspapers that we have found so necessary in the African American community, not just in Durham, but all throughout the state of North Carolina, with the secession of all three editors. And so as a result of that, you know, I told folks, those of us here in Durham, we, I think, were quite happy, and we just assumed that the Carolina Times and Kenneth Edmonds would be here forever. And so, therefore, you know, much like making sausage, you know, we were not concerned with the in-between, what happens to make the sausage. We wanted the end product. Well, the sausage was long hours, a crew of maybe about three, photography, moving about, and the business side of that as well, and then working with community organizations. And so that's the hard work. And I told folks, look, I got tired just writing all that and saying all that about his life. So I imagine what it was like for him to do the work.
Well, what happens now?
What happens now is that, you know, I think there's a great deal of interest, and I think his son, you know, understands, you know, the history and the legacy and the story. I hope is that someone will come along and possibly have an opportunity maybe to help continue that legacy and that story. And I'm sure his son Christian will be possibly open to possibly, we don't know, to entertaining that. But that's a right left unto him. So but our hope is that someone will come forward and work to tell the story in a different way, possibly. In a new venue, possibly, but that story is important and so very necessary, I think, for this community here in Durham.
Andre Vann is North Carolina Central's archivist. Andre, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for helping tell this story.
All right, listen up. I don't like white people.
Unfortunately, anytime you do a story about real censorship in the country, it's being done by people on the right, especially when it comes to school boards in conservative states. Alaska is no exception, where the school board has overwhelmingly voted to take certain classic books out of public school curriculum. So let me give you the examples of the books that they're targeting. I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings by Maya Angelou, Catch 22 by Joseph Heller, The Things They Carried by Tim O'Brien, The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald, and Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison were all taken off an approved list of works that teachers at the Mat-Su Borough School District may use for instruction. So Jim Hart, who is the school board vice president, said, "If I were to read these in a corporate environment, in an office environment, I would be dragged into an equal opportunity complaint proceeding." No, you wouldn't. No, you wouldn't.
No, you wouldn't.
The question is, why? He is an idiot. Why is this acceptable in one environment and not another? It's acceptable in all environments. These are classic books.
Yeah.
They're like, what are you talking about? What is this man talking about? This school district is a disaster. So they're worried, by the way, of anti-white messaging. That was one of the things cited. So, for instance, Caged Bird was derided for anti-white messaging. Mm-hmm. Gatsby and Things were loaded with sexual references. In Invisible Man has bad language, very naughty. Mm-hmm. And Catch 22 includes violence, according to the school district. Several books that were not removed from classrooms also came under harsh criticism and scrutiny. So The Jungle, which was one of my favorite books when I was in high school, and A Christmas Carol could be interpreted as advocating for socialism.
They did not say that.
They did.
A Christmas Carol?
Yep.
Was it the goose? Was it too generous an offering?
No, this is crazy. This is crazy. I think they included the Christmas Carol as a potential book on the chopping block. So they would, like, in their minds, like, hide their conservatism. They're not doing a good job, okay? Because these are books that they criticize, but they have not been taken off the list of approved books.
Okay.
No, this is crazy. This type of censorship should infuriate people. We saw this happen in Texas, where many of these books, by the way, school textbooks are published. They wanted to take certain figures out of the social studies books, you know, people like Thurgood Marshall, and they wanted to replace him with like the Phyllis Schlafly's of the world,
yeah.
You know, because they want to indoctrinate kids with their nonsense conservatism. And I have no doubt that that's what's taking place in Alaska right now. It's disgusting.
The man knot, race, class, genre, and the dilemmas of black manhood.
In Brunswick, Georgia today, a huge crowd rallied on what would have been Ahmaud Arbery's 26th birthday. Arbery, who was black, was shot and killed while jogging in February. Two white men were arrested and charged with his murder yesterday. As Georgia Public Broadcasting's Emily Jones reports, today's rally brought a mix of grief, relief, and frustration. And a note, this story includes an offensive racial slur.
The arrest of father and son Gregory and Travis McMichael more than 10 weeks after the shooting death inspired celebration in southeast Georgia last night, and it continued today. But for Ahmaud Arbery's family, the event was more a moment of grief. His aunt Kimberly Arbery broke down crying as she remembered her nephew.
Keep my family in your prayers. They always told me I was the strong of my family. But this time here, it's hard.
It was hard for several of Arbery's family members to speak at the rally, but civil rights leader Francis Johnson of the New Georgia Project saw reason for hope in the crowd.
And it's in the faces of you who stand here today, black people and white people, and everyone in between, who can call this for what it was, a straight up conviction.
Some people were holding up signs that said, "We want answers, we want convictions." Another theme of the rally was that the arrests are just one step in what's expected to be a lengthy court case. Khalif Edwards was a friend of Arbery's.
I'm just going to sit back and pray and hope that the justice system does what they're put in place to do, and that's to show justice and have those people, get in trouble for what they did wrong.
But many at the rally don't have a lot of faith in the Glynn County justice system. They say this shooting and the long-delayed arrests are not the first injustice here. People in the community are calling for the local district attorney, Jackie Johnson, to step down. One of the men arrested, Gregory McMichael, worked for more than 20 years as an investigator in the DA's office. Because of that, Johnson removed herself from the case early on, and the second DA assigned to the case removed himself at the family's request. It was only the third DA on the case who brought in the Georgia Bureau of Investigation on Tuesday. That was the same day a graphic cell phone video became public showing the altercation and shooting of Arbery. Vic Reynolds heads the GBI and said today his agency could not get involved until it was formally requested to do so.
In a perfect world, would we prefer to have been asked to become involved in February? Of course, but sometimes it isn't a perfect world.
The arrests of the McMichaels came just 2 days after the GBI stepped in. They were charged with murder and aggravated assault, but not a hate crime. Georgia is one of the few states that does not have a hate crime law. Reynolds says more arrests could come.
We're going to go wherever the evidence takes us. Say hypothetically, if we believe tomorrow or in a week or 3 weeks, there's probable cause for an arrest, and we'll do it.
Reynolds says for now, it's still an open investigation. For NPR News, I'm Emily Jones in Brunswick, Georgia.
Well, we don't see much because we're locked up 23 hours and 15 minutes every day. That is to say, everybody in prison all across the state of Pennsylvania are under this emergency decree of, it was March 13th or 15th. Ever since then, we've been locked down 23 hours and 15 minutes. So you're out of the cell 45 minutes a day. It could be morning, afternoon, or night. But in that 45 minutes, you got to bathe. You can call a friend or family. You can get on the kiosk. in your cell. Other than that, you're locked in your cell. It's like the whole state is a hole. H-O-L-E now. And that's how it was on death row. That's how it was in the hole. Well, it's like that all around now in the name of health. We've heard that people have been sick, mostly in Phoenix, which is near Philadelphia. But there have been other outbreaks, but there isn't a lot of coverage of that. The counties seem to have been getting it the worst. Of course, they're closest to the community. You know, people are coming in and going out. And I'm speaking of staff members, volunteers, visitors, you name it. But what happens in the counties makes its way to the state. It's just a matter of time. I think mass incarceration has become, I hate to say it, but I believe it, normalized. That is to say, for all intents and purposes, who gives a damn? And, you know, while your family or your loved ones might care, the so-called average American, even the average American who is himself locked down in his home or her home, they find this intolerable. They find it outrageous. They're going nuts. But, you know, Pennsylvania, New York, under the crazy Rockefeller drug laws, all across the country, you've got millions of people who are locked down, you know, for years. In Pennsylvania, for decades. Like Maroon Schultz and other people who've been locked down for decades. In solitary confinement. And so, you know, people are getting a taste of this, even though it's a relaxed, distant taste. It's a taste. Because you can't go out when you want to go out. You can't leave. You're locked in. And, it's safer, to be frank. And, you know, what we've seen is people kind of burst loose and, I hope I missed my guess. I hope I'm wrong. But I have a sneaking suspicion that we're going to see a second wave in this country. And the fact that it's already the country with the highest number of COVID-19 related deaths tells me we're going to see some really grim days and some really high numbers. The numbers are jumping. It must be 2,000 a day. 1,300 to 2,500 a day, and those numbers are rising. In the last few weeks, they've gone from hundreds to tens of thousands.
You know, how does it feel to you about the fact that even though a virus doesn't discriminate, we've seen that it now does discriminate?
Well, because it follows the economic realities of the system in which it operates. That is to say, the people who are in touch with the public, the bus drivers, the nurses, many of the doctors, police, fire, a lot of them, especially in the big cities, are Black and Puerto Rican. And they're out there, you know, to feed their families, support their families, and they're in contact. And many of them have very little protection. They're being treated like, essentially, they call them essential workers, but they're being treated essentially like all workers.
They're like,
you know,
they're like
go to work and shut up.
They're like disposable workers.
They are. So if you really are honest about it, to call them essential workers is a lie. It's like calling a prison a correctional institution. You know, and I know, they don't do much correcting here. All they do is harass people and make them worse. Essential workers are really disposable workers. They're the people, and you know, as the news has caught up with that reality, and we've gotten the reporting of, say, 60% of the people who are dying in New York are Black and Latino. You've seen other parts of the state, the United States, whiter parts of the state, saying, come on, unlock us. We're not those guys. And we're seeing that. So they're really disposable to the economic and political system.
College don't mean shit. y'all niggas, and you gonna be niggas forever, just like us niggas.
So in the last few days, a number of colleges have announced their plans to reopen this fall in person. The list now includes Whitworth University, Baylor University, and Haverford College, as well as some others. Here's Brown University President Christina Paxson arguing that reopening college campuses this fall should be a national priority. She uses that term, national priority, for the well-being of students, but also of the economy.
Universities and colleges all over the country are major employers. We're some of the most stable employers that there are out there. And my fear is that if a lot of, especially small colleges, can't open, it will be very, very difficult for them to stay in business. And that will hurt their workforces. And it will also strand students who are partway through programs in colleges that can't continue.
Brown University President Christina Paxson on NPR last week. She said she plans to open school with the help of testing, contact tracing, and separating six students. Here's one more college president who's been in the news on this. Purdue president Mitch Daniels said on Good Morning America and lots of other media last week that he is determined to try to open in person and with a full student body at that Indiana campus in the fall. Students and faculty and staff total 50,000 people at Purdue on a relatively compact campus, if you've ever been there. He made the media rounds, not just GMA, to say he really wants to reopen despite the density. And yet Daniels, who some of you know is the former Republican governor of Indiana before Mike Pence, acknowledged on Good Morning America that there are hurdles with residence halls, dining facilities, class sizes, and older faculty and staff, and he admits he hasn't figured it out.
We don't pretend to have a plan yet, although we have many, many ideas, a faculty-led group, including some of really the world's premier biologists and public health experts, has been working on options. We'll be looking at them very soon.
Purdue University President Mitch Daniels last week on Good Morning America on ABC. So, and with me now to talk about the hopes of Brown and Purdue and others and to help take your calls is Lila Burke, reporter at Inside Higher Ed. Lila, welcome to WNYC. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you so much for having me.
How common would you say the determined attitudes of the presidents of Brown and Purdue are nationally at this moment?
I would say that it's obvious that, you know, with making the media rounds and everything else, the presidents of Brown and Purdue are perhaps you could say taking a more aggressive stance. But with the college presidents that I've talked to, I mean, everyone wants to open in person. If you think about it, that's really what colleges are. Many colleges that, you know, operate campuses, you know, are sort of primed to do. And there's a lot of fear, I think, about if there is an online semester in the fall, what students are going to think about that. Students, we've seen many students don't really enjoy learning online in this way. And there have been, you know, tuition strikes. Students are asking for discounts at some colleges where they're learning online. Actually, they're learning online everywhere. But students are sort of saying, you know, this isn't really the education that I want. This isn't the education that I paid for. And those are sort of, you know, you could say they're only at a few institutions. Not every institution has that level of discontent among its students. But, you know, college presidents really do want to open in person. They're worried about tuition. They're worried about revenue. You know, I think what Christina Paxson says, which is that if colleges don't reopen in the fall, there could be many colleges, you know, that could be, especially smaller colleges, that could be sort of the end of them. I think that's an opinion that's sort of widely held. The question is just, is saving them worth, you know, the risk if it is, you know, sort of an unsafe situation.
And some universities have announced plans to reopen if it is deemed safe or depending on guidance from state and federal authorities. You know, I spoke to a Purdue parent who I happened to know yesterday, who despite Daniels making the media rounds and being this national, we want to open guy, this Purdue parent said to me, it's been made clear to the families that they are still determining if they can do it. So are any universities or colleges out there right now saying we are opening in person no matter what?
No, I would say no. You know, if you look closely at what college presidents are saying, what they're expressing to students, this is an intent to reopen. This is saying, you know, this is what we want. And so in a way, you know, it's sort of, this is what everyone wants. So the statement isn't that meaningful in that way, but every college is looking at contingency plans. For, you know, maybe we'll have a semester with students on campus, but there's going to be changes. There's going to be no sports. Every student can get their own dorm room, something like that. And they're also looking at contingency plans for if it is, you know, truly unsafe for parents to return, or I'm sorry, for students to return. And I think college presidents, you know, acknowledge that a lot of this is out of their control. You know, they cannot determine what the public health landscape looks like in the fall. And they also can't determine what their governors and lawmakers are going to decide on the fall. You know, a college can say, we plan to reopen. And if their governor says, you know, institute some restrictions, it doesn't matter what the college says. You know, that's the law. So I think college presidents are very aware of this uncertainty, and students and parents should be too.
Dan in Flatbush, you're on WNYC. Hi, Dan.
Hey, good morning, Brian. So yeah, I'm a Brooklyn College student. I'm a sociology major. I'm hopefully going to be finishing next year. And, you know, I would like nothing more than to be able to go back in person in the fall. But I know that that's just not realistic. I think we're going to be hit with like a second and possibly third wave of outbreaks that might be worse than the first. And I think that we have to be prepared for that. And believe me, like this, you know, since we switched to online classes, it's no one's fault. No, certainly no professor's fault, because who could have foreseen this? But the learning experience has been anemic. Like, it's really hard to stay engaged, at least for me personally, between the stress of this situation emotionally and the disconnectedness and disjointedness of learning online. I also just wanted to note that my girlfriend is an adjunct professor at Parsons, and she is teaching online classes, but they are extremely sparsely attended because of student protests. They want a tuition refund. And so they're just not showing up to online classes. And I have my own opinions on that. I don't know how exactly to feel about that, but this is a real problem. But I think that the student community and the faculty have to just, you know, get our heads around the fact that this is not just going to go away in the fall. And that's not just for New York. I think that the entire country and beyond is in for second and third waves, and we have to emotionally and logistically prepare for that.
Dan, thank you so much for weighing in and helping us to report this story, really. Please call us again. And Lila from Inside Higher Ed, have you heard that Parsons type story before? Are students at other institutions, or if you can even confirm that one, demanding tuition refunds because of online rather than in-person learning?
Yes, that is happening. I hadn't heard about the Parsons example, but there are sort of protests and you know, these sort of tuition strikes happening. I know UChicago is a notable example, University of Chicago. And students at other institutions are looking at lawsuits in order to maybe get some money back. It's important to note that many colleges, though not all, have, you know, for students who were living on campus, have given back, you know, prorated room and board refunds. So many colleges.
So room and board because they're not living there, but in general not tuition because they're still going to get those credits?
Yes. So colleges at this point are not have not been giving tuition discounts for the semester that is currently ending, though that is something students have said they want. Colleges would say, you know, you are paying for the credits, and those credits add up to a degree, and the value of that degree has not diminished. And so we are not going to, you know, prorate your tuition. Whether that will happen in the fall if there is an online learning situation has sort of yet to be seen. I think it will sort of depend on, you know, if there is some early adopters or something like that, and, you know, maybe other colleges will follow. But right now they're sort of holding the line, so to speak.
John in Yonkers, you're on WNYC with Lila Burke from Inside Higher Ed as we talk about whether and how colleges will open in person in the fall. Hi, John.
Hi, Brian. Good morning. Say, I'm here with my brother-in-law, who's 64 years old, who's a cafeteria worker at a college. Now, he meets these college students every day, a couple hundred of them, face-to-face. And what do you do in that case? It's like, it's almost like going back to work is a death sentence.
What are colleges saying, Lila, that they will do about dining halls and about older faculty and staff?
Well, it really depends on the institution. I mean, at this point, a lot of colleges, you know, their dining staff, their custodial staff, while in some cases they are being, you know, they have sort of been told to go home, and they are being paid. In many cases, they've been laid off, or in cases where, you know, they usually don't work over the summer, they've been sort of let go early. And there's sort of a question about whether they will be invited back in the fall. Colleges, I think, as far as dining, are looking at continuing what they have now for students who remain on campus. Many colleges have allowed students who, you know, really have nowhere else to go. Maybe they're formerly homeless. Maybe they have a documented abuse history with their family to stay on campus. And in many of those cases, students are getting meals through this sort of grab-and-go system in dining halls. So, you know, they go to a dining hall, they pick up a prepackaged meal, and they can take it back to their dorm room or their apartment to eat. As far as older faculty and staff, I mean, I think it is different with faculty and with staff. Faculty might have an easier time, you know, being sort of working from home, being online. It really depends on the institution. You know, I've seen colleges where they have sort of said faculty, you know, will have to return, and it doesn't really matter if you're uncomfortable. You know, we will be focusing on social distancing and focusing on PPE, and we will be personal protective equipment, and we will be making sure you are safe. But, you know, if you want to be paid, you kind of have to show up. And then other colleges, I spoke with the president of William Jewell College in Missouri. They're saying they're not, you know, with their plan to reopen in person in the fall, they're not forcing any faculty or students to come onto campus, that faculty will have the option to continue teaching online as they have been. And even though their students are on campus, and maybe they can hold a lecture and ask their students to actually gather in person to watch that lecture. And that students, who might not want to attend in-person classes because, you know, we think of students as being 18 to 22, but that's not always true.
Right.
Or students who might have underlying health conditions, that they might not want to return to classes, and making that option to continue in their classes online an option to them. So I think it really depends on the institution. Something I wanted to say, just because I mentioned the students who are on campus now, I mean, mm-hmm. those students who, you know, might have difficult home situations or might not have another home to go to, you know, they are sort of concerned about what's going to happen over the summer. It's not entirely clear at every institution whether they will be allowed to stay over the summer. And then also just what life is going to look like for them in the fall. Will they be allowed to, if colleges don't reopen, you know, if there is a stay-at-home online learning situation, whether those students will be able to stay on campus or not.
There's a conspiracy theory sweeping the globe that coronavirus is caused by 5G technology.
The theory is that 5G damages the human immune system.
All of us should know what's taking place right under our noses.
What 5G actually does, it absorbs oxygen, and that's really important to know.
5G gets switched on, people drop like flies, and all of a sudden you've got the excuse because, well, there's a virus going on.
Some people in the UK bought into it so much they started lighting cell phone towers on fire.
5G burning.
The disinformation that's being spread on the coronavirus and COVID-19 is having a devastating effect in hospitals across the country. A doctor here in New York telling NBC News that dealing with conspiracy theorists is the second most painful thing I've had to deal with, other than separation of families from their loved one. The doctor has now stopped engaging with the trolls on Facebook, some of whom claim the hospitals are empty and the virus was part of a plot to vaccinate or microchip U.S. Other medical professionals are calling on social media companies to do more to stop the disinformation from spreading. Quote, I do think it's a monumental task to hold these companies to account, but in the COVID case, they truly have blood on their hands. NBC reporter who wrote about all this, Ben Collins, joins me now. Ben, what motivated you to do this piece?
A guy reached out to me and said, I am having a hard time dealing with this, frankly. You know, this doctor came to me and he said, in very blunt terms, frankly, like, I don't know how to deal with this. He was in an argument with a guy on Facebook, or several people on Facebook, who told him he wasn't a real doctor, that the hospitals were empty. And he said, you know, I have 200 people in my ICU. This is happening. And then he went outside and he heard the cheer at 7 o'clock that we all hear every day in New York City. And he just broke down and cried because he didn't know what reality was at this point. He just didn't know. He had no real idea. And that's the larger problem here, is that we have this, you know, we have these systems set up that reward these bad guys going after these doctors. There's no real way to stop this because the bad guys have rigged this system to make it so those messages that they use to push things like supplements or just political messages, those go to the top. Those go to the doctors when they get home from these tough shifts, and they don't see all the rewards that you would traditionally see because, you know, Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, they reward engagement and they reward hostility.
And so what they're rewarding right now are insane, baseless conspiracy theories that have sort of taken root, that, you know, doctors coming home from watching their patients die, trying to fight the disease, and coming home to social media and sometimes like family members or friends or people they know, telling them that the whole thing was some, you know, plot by Bill Gates to, you know, I don't know, implant chips in people or depopulate the world, whatever nonsense is going on. But those are high ranking, high engagement stories across Facebook and other platforms.
Yeah, and look, this makes sense, right? We are in a time of chaos, basically. We are in a time where people's trust in institutions and various different things has gone away, and their livelihoods have changed. The way they live their lives have changed. So instead of, you know, embracing that ambiguity and looking for answers that are realistic, they go to the easy ones. They go to the simple ones, and the simple ones are things they can see. So, you know, if you talk to conspiracy theory researchers, they call conspiracy theorists the last believers in an ordered universe. They always try to look for boogeymen. They always look for somebody like Bill Gates, who everyone knows, right? Everyone knows Bill Gates. And if they can say that he did this, and everyone can point to him and say, if we get rid of Bill Gates, then everything's fixed. Everything's, you know, all of this is over. All this staying at home is over. But it doesn't really work like that. We know this. It's, you know, science is a lot more complicated than just Bill Gates doing something or a 5G tower doing something. And that's the scary part, is that these bad guys, these traditional conspiracy theorists who are preying on these people at home on Facebook and YouTube all day, they are creating these small armies. And the people in the small armies don't know, but they are really hurting these doctors.
Well, and there are real public health effects here, right? I mean, and there's a responsibility for the platforms. There's this letter dozens of doctors have signed on to, an open letter calling on Facebook and Instagram, YouTube and Twitter to detox the algorithms that decide what people say and correct the record on health misinformation. I mean, how have these platforms approached this? How have they dealt with this?
You know, they have taken some steps, and, you know, the problem that we see over and over again is that these things go viral and then they sort of like rein it back in. Today there was a video on YouTube or Facebook, and if you have somebody in your life who's chronically addicted to YouTube or has like Facebook brain, I think is the technical term for it, they will have seen this thing called Flandemic, which is this awful YouTube video saying, don't wear your mask, it gives you coronavirus. This terrible stuff that you really, it is impossible to be true. I know. And the issue is that this stuff goes viral first and then they correct it. What we need is actor-based enforcement. People who, you know, none of these people that are pushing that video are new here, right? They are people who are constants in these anti-vax communities. They have been here for years and years. They are just packaging this stuff together first time around coronavirus theme. And since it goes around that coronavirus theme, it feels new, feels better to these people, and then they can push it again on Facebook and YouTube.
Ben Collins, who did some great reporting on this for us and has been following this story throughout. Thank you so much.
There's nothing wrong with black people that ending racism can't solve.
White supremacy is the sickness.
The coronavirus pandemic has had a disproportionately large effect on black Americans. So what can local officials do to make sure that the communities hit hardest are getting the right information about this virus? Here's NPR's Juana Summers.
Every week, listeners can find Kansas City Mayor Quentin Lucas dialing into KPRS, one of Kansas City's hip-hop and R&B stations. He's there to give an update on COVID-19.
Got Mayor Quentin Lucas on the line.
Lucas, who was elected last year, has been pushing his staff to prioritize appearances like this as part of his response to the pandemic, out of concern that some traditional modes of messaging may not be reaching black people.
I'm like, get me in some forum where somebody who isn't actually usually seeking out perhaps news and information will catch what's going on.
In Kansas City and across the country, public health experts and leaders are warning that there isn't enough communication about the coronavirus, even as data shows black Americans facing alarming rates of infection. The reasons for the disparities are not hard to explain. Dr. Jeanette Berkley-Patton is a professor at the University of Missouri-Kansas City and the director of its Health Equity Institute.
For the African-American community, there are high rates of diabetes and heart disease and many other health conditions and risks that really put the black community at a disadvantage.
And black Americans are disproportionately a part of the workforce that cannot work from home. They're also fighting against a historic distrust in the healthcare system that spans decades. Missouri Congressman Emanuel Cleaver is a former mayor of Kansas City.
It's just an unsavory salad of misbeliefs and living circumstances that created this awful situation.
That mistrust dates back to the infamous Tuskegee study, in which black men with syphilis were unaware that they were intentionally not being treated over 40 years. It's also the result of racial health inequities that have persisted for generations without being resolved by the government or U.S. health systems. Berkley-Patton says that when communicating during a public health crisis, a message must be tailored to individual communities. She also says that the messenger matters.
We need to see these community leaders getting tested. We need to see faith leaders getting tested virtually, you know, in front of their congregations so that people can actually see this is what the testing process is going to look like.
Many public health experts and community leaders say that the early misconceptions about the coronavirus remind them of the early years of the HIV epidemic. Pastor Eric Williams of Calvary Temple Baptist Church in Kansas City.
Back in the 80s, late 80s, early 90s, what our community heard was that HIV was a white gay male disease and that it fit into who we thought we were. And we held on to that misinformation to our detriment.
Experts also point to data that shows African Americans were less likely to have gotten a seasonal flu shot than their white counterparts. The fear is that the same thing could happen when there is a vaccine for this virus. Juana Summers, NPR News. New York, New York. It's a hell of a
town. My name is Jonah Allen. I'm the Brooklyn Borough President's Office.
Today we want to address some of the recent controversies that took place around social distancing over the weekend, and the need for clearer, more consistent messaging and enforcement around social distancing, especially as the weather gets warmer. I would encourage folks to keep themselves muted until the end. We will open it up to questions, on-topic questions from the press following the borough president speaking. But for now, we're going to turn it over to the Brooklyn Borough President, Eric Adams.
Thank you, Jonah. And I want to thank all of those who joined us. And I want to thank my deputy borough president, Ingrid Martin, who really started and brought this to our attention in the beginning of these interactions. We have received a number of outreach from various people within various parts of the city, some in Lower Manhattan, others parts of Brooklyn, that we are starting off our summer months in a manner in which I am extremely concerned, and I'm calling on the city to be extremely consistent in their messaging as well as the enforcement. It's imperative that we are consistent in how we address the issues of social distancing. We cannot, in one community, remove basketball courts because young people are playing basketball, and other communities allow large crowds to gather on the piers or on the lawns, yards, and the parks in our city and boroughs throughout the entire city of New York. It sends the wrong message. We cannot issue summonses to those who don't have face masks in one area and then issue face masks to those in another area. And what we saw earlier today, an incident that appeared to have evolved out of a social distancing issue, escalated to, I believe, an extreme level of aggression at the beginning of the incident. And then the police officer used a level of aggression when he spoke with or interacted with a bystander. And I just want to have my staff split the screen and show this particular incident to give a clarification on what I saw as a former law enforcement officer. It appears as though at the beginning of this incident, there's an encounter that's taking place, and we could just hit play and let it fold out. There's an encounter that took place here where from the reports we received, even this encounter is a social distance encounter that took place, and there seems to be a high level of aggression here. We need to be extremely conscious that in many of the communities that our officers are going to interact with, there are historical and traditional negative encounters with law enforcement. It's going to take a special level of communication, a special level of interaction, as we attempt to interact with the public. This officer here is showing a taser. He clicked it several times, and he's engaging with the innocent bystander instead of remaining. He then punched the innocent bystander, threw him to the ground, continued to be aggressive in his actions, and then continued to punch him even while he was down. This is clearly in violation of all police procedures. This individual is not even resisting in any way. This officer was part of the original arrest. Instead of handling the original arrest, allowed himself to get involved with another encounter and then continue to exchange with the public. This is unacceptable, particularly now when you're going to need, as these officers are cordoning off the area, their job is to deal with the crowd control and keep the crowd back. But we must be extremely communicative at this point. We are going to have more interactions with the public due to coronavirus than we have ever had in probably the history of the New York City Police Department. We're going to be telling the public to wear masks, to not to congregate, to have social distancing. These are non-criminal interactions with the public. And in the history of the NYPD, there has never been this level and volume of interaction. It is imperative that, one, the police department is consistent in their messaging, is consistent on what they tell officers at roll calls, is consistent on how we inform the public. And I want to show two additional photos that really highlights of the concern that we're talking about. One took place at a pier, and the other one took place where a person was issued a summons. Here at this pier, you're clearly seeing open violations of the social distancing call. You have people that are congregating together. I find it hard to believe that everyone in this picture lives in the same apartment building. So we can't state that they're merely socializing with people who they are living with. But when you look at something like this, and then you compare it to the social distance enforcement in other parts of the city, it just sends the wrong message. We have to be consistent. If we remove basketball courts because children in Brownsville and inner cities are playing basketball and they haven't gotten the message clear, then we need to close parks and show a level of enforcement in other parts of the city that they too are not showing the imperativeness of social distancing. And then there was another photo, if we have it, of showing a gentleman what appears to be issued a summons for not wearing a face mask. And if we are going to issue summonses for every non-wearing a face mask in one part of the city, then we need to do the same in other parts of the city. And our call today is to start out right so we can end right. Allow our officers to do their job, but at the same time, let's inform our officers that a light touch with a high level of communication is what is needed for us to get through this deployment. And so this summons was given to a gentleman, which appears to be based on the mayor's executive order, and it appears to be due to not wearing a face mask. And if that is the case, then we can't, in one part of the city, give face masks to individuals, and then in another part of the city, we're writing summonses for doing so. So the consistency of the enforcement of the rules is extremely important, and I find it is imperative as we start out at the beginning of the warm days of summer that it doesn't turn into a hot interaction between the police and the public. And we can do that by proper communication, consistent enforcement, clarity on how the rules are going to be carried out, and being extremely clear with our officers of the challenges and the difficulties that come from doing this type of enforcement, an unprecedented level of enforcement for the entire New York City Police Department, an unprecedented level of enforcement for the public, and we need to make sure that it is done with a level of patience and a level of clarity. And I am calling on the city of New York to make sure, both through the New York City Police Department and state, that we are going to ensure that we use a very light hand to ensure that we can get the goals that we're looking for, to encourage social distancing, to allow people to interact, to ensure that people are wearing face covering, and make sure these first face coverings are available to all New Yorkers. And that is the primary reason, after looking at the videos today, after receiving a number of calls from people who have received summonses or who have had negative interactions with our law enforcement community. We want to resolve this issue at the start of the summer before it exacerbates to the level that we saw today, with particular one officer after the initial arrest, and even the original incident of arrest, if it was only a social distance infraction.
She's my friends, but I'm in France. I'm just saying. France is now in its seventh week of lockdown, and many Parisians have escaped the city to hunker down in country houses. But in the densely packed suburbs around the French capital, residents don't have that luxury. NPR's Eleanor Beardsley sends this report from a town just outside Paris.
So they're giving out free food here in Clichy-sous-Bois, and there is just a line down the street. There are hundreds and hundreds of people showing up that need help during this confinement.
Clichy-sous-Bois is just 12 miles from the center of Paris, but it feels a world away. The town forms part of a huge northern suburb called Seine-Saint-Denis. Instead of historic buildings, there are rows of tower block apartments. Stéphane Troussel is an elected official here.
La Seine-Saint-Denis, c'est le département le plus jeune et le plus pauvre de France métropolitaine.
Seine-Saint-Denis is the youngest and poorest district in France, and this health crisis is shining a harsh light on the social inequalities here.
53-year-old Rachida Aziz immigrated to France from Algeria 23 years ago. She says it's difficult to be holed up all day with her family. The apartment is too small for five people, and we don't have a balcony or a garden, she says. My kids are 7, 15, and 20. In Paris, managers work from home. In the suburbs, people have frontline jobs as bus drivers, cashiers, and garbage collectors. Town councillor Stéphane Testé asks people to keep their distance as he hands out soap. He says before the schools closed, many families relied on subsidized school lunches for their kids.
We started this food bank last week, and 300 families came. The next day, 700 showed up. It's getting harder as the lockdown goes on.
Dr. Frédéric Adnay is the head of emergency services in Seine-Saint-Denis. He says the death toll here from COVID-19 is much higher than in Paris. The disease is being transmitted within large, cooped-up families, worsening an already bad situation.
C'est un département au niveau sanitaire qui a tous les voyants au rouge, hein.
This district had all the red health alerts even before this pandemic. We have the highest infant mortality, the lowest life expectancy, and the highest number of AIDS, cancer, and tuberculosis cases, you name it.
Paris may be empty, but in the suburbs, the trams are still crowded. Young men hang out on street corners. These suburbs are also legendary for tensions between young people and police. The 2005 riots started right here in Clichy-sous-Bois. Violence flared again last week after a young man on a scooter ran into a police car and shattered his leg. Youths burned cars, police fired tear gas. In a video from his hospital bed, the unnamed youth appealed for calm. I'm no choir boy, he said, but I ask you to stay home. We will get justice in court.
Laurent Roussier, maire de Saint-Denis.
Laurent Roussier is mayor of Saint-Denis, the largest town in this district. He says the threat of unrest grows the longer people are shut in.
I
am asking the police during their patrols not to provoke people. Sometimes it's better to drop it than to have a situation that turns poisonous. But I'm also calling on young people to stay calm.
Roussier says the last thing the suburbs needs on top of this pandemic is violence. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Clichy-sous-Bois, France.
Decades ago, I said that, you know, I didn't know much about Brazil, still don't. But from what I heard from people who had been there, or people who were from there, because I'd heard a long time ago that outside of Africa, the largest population of black people is in Brazil. But you don't ever see them on television, even on the Brazilian programs. It's every now and then, I mean, somebody will pan the camera, and you'll spot them on the, at Mardi Gras time. But where are they the rest of the time when they make the advertisements and do all the hoopla and whatnot? You wouldn't think that it's, you know, it was just, you would think that there's just a smattering of black people in Brazil. I mean, when I say black people that look like black people in Central Africa. Mm-hmm. But the numbers are huge. But they all push back up in those hills. But when it comes to classification, from what I understand, Brazilians will tell you, we don't have any discrimination here. you know, everybody's the same. Color don't make no difference here. This is Brazil.
Brazil has announced its highest daily total of coronavirus deaths. In the last 24 hours, 615 Brazilians have lost their lives. The grim toll is putting growing pressure on President Bolsonaro over what his critics say is a chaotic response to the pandemic. But despite this and a healthcare system under immense strain, the president continues to deny there's a serious problem. Our correspondent Katie Watson reports from Sao Paulo State, the country's worst affected area.
In the poor eastern suburbs of Sao Paulo, a group of people are sat in an outside bar playing snooker. Social distancing doesn't happen in favelas. Life carries on as usual. With one difference. In these often violent neighbourhoods, COVID-19 has become another killer, weaving its way into the narrow streets. 29-year-old Aline lives with her husband and three children. Aline used to earn $5 a day as a cleaner. Now she relies on donations from neighbours and the state. Bolsonaro says he wants the economy to get back up and running so the poorest don't suffer. But she doesn't buy that.
Bolsonaro is wrong. He tells people to go to work, then people die. And then he'll just say, another one died. Well, it's not my son. What he should say is, stay at home.
Jair Bolsonaro isn't dubbed the tropical Trump for nothing. Just like his American idol, he's been railing against lockdown. On Tuesday, he said the worst was over.
É sinal que o pior já passou.
Then came the biggest jump in the number of deaths so far. While Bolsonaro wants people to get back to work, states and municipalities have been ignoring him, introducing quarantine measures and even lockdown in some parts of the country where the numbers of dead have soared. But in Sao Paulo, 6 weeks of quarantine in and something's not working. According to government data, less than half of the city's residents are now staying home. The man in charge of Brazil's wealthiest state, João Doria, has become Bolsonaro's biggest critic. He's been accused by the president of imposing unnecessarily tough measures.
You have two viruses to combat, the coronavirus and Bolsonaro virus.
But quarantine offers little opportunity for the poor. Non-essential businesses are supposed to be shut across the state, but authorities seem to turn a blind eye. I meet Odair sitting outside a narrow little shop. He's wearing a mask, and the shop's shutters are half closed. A couple of customers climb over the shutters to have a browse. Odair doesn't think the police do anything. He makes no apologies about staying open. I need to eat, don't I? Bolsonaro's view, he says, makes more sense. Open up, use a mask and alcohol gel, and then let's get back to normal. Brazilians are confused. Do they listen to local politicians who say stay indoors, or their president who says go back to work? More and more, rules are being bent or ignored, and that couldn't come at a worse time for the country.
Katie Watson in Sao Paulo.
And in 1871, the same year the Klan became an illegal terrorist organization, another group was founded, the National Rifle Association. Soon politicians passed one of the first gun laws, making it illegal for any black person to own one.
Well, a group of men is working to help change the narrative around gun rights for black people, and they sparked that conversation yesterday morning by escorting one representative into the state capitol while armed. Kara Lake is here for you with their message.
In our climate that we're in right now, it's kind of, I guess, taboo if you see a black person with a gun. It's like, what is he doing with that? Where is he going with that? What's he up to?
Michael Lynn III can be seen here, right in the middle of this photo taken yesterday at the state capitol. But now he's in the middle of a bigger conversation.
So I guess it was one intern to, you know, challenge that idea to normalize the fact that we are just Americans, just like any other, you know, just like any other white gun owner, we are just Americans.
And while at the capitol, they wanted to make sure Representative Sarah Anthony felt safe entering the building after last week's protest.
However many of them, there's a lot of them, they showed up guns blazing for what? I don't know what, you know, your guns have to do with protesting COVID or anything like that.
And he says he sees black people making comments about last week's protesters, armed inside the Capitol, looking down at representatives, around officers.
A lot of people felt like they couldn't do what the white people were doing because we're black, and that's not true.
He says the black community shouldn't be afraid to open carry. Here for you in Lansing, Kiera Lake, 6 News.
Philando Castile, Alton Sterling. Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Saturday, May 9, 2020, so I have been told. He said, victim of racism, white supremacy, victims guaranteed qualified. But he said, in our current times, it's kind of seen as taboo, a black person having a gun. And I paused and I thought, what time period under the system of white supremacy would it not be taboo? At what point would it be normal, cool, acceptable, legal for a nigger to have a firearm in public? And that's no cause for alarm. I started to ponder. 1995, maybe? I said, oh no, it's O.J. Simpson year. Let's see. 1960s? I thought they tried that, the Black Panthers, and they changed the gun laws. Okay, scratch that, keep going. And I said, it would seem like if you keep going back far enough, it's just going to get worse, because, I mean, they did have actual laws. No guns for niggers. So, I don't even know, like, what good it would do to keep going backwards. Like, I don't think, you know, if you get back, because we've had a whole lot of folks who come on this program and talked about different laws that they had, specifically in Virginia, no weapons for niggers. So, I don't know. What time period he thinks it would have been cool? Just because we got the Rona situation now, that is no change to the system of racism, white supremacy. Anywho. This is our weekly compensatory call-in. Dial in if you have thoughts, observations, questions, counter-racist suggestions. The number is 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Not for spectators. Not for spectators. A few things to get to before we get to the callers. Man, very somber times that we have. As Dr. King said, we have some difficult days ahead. So there are many people dying on the planet for many reasons under the system of white supremacy racism. We have the current health crisis and lots of other reasons why people perish on the planet, and particularly perish unnecessarily and before their time. That happens constantly. A few of the notable, all deaths are, but a few of the notable deaths from this week. Kenneth Edmonds, we heard, black journalist, North Carolina. Importance of black journalists cannot be understated. Mr. Scotty Reed, the Cows, many. Ida B. Wells, journalist as well. But super important, and in fact, I was not familiar with Mr. Edmonds' paper. I didn't grow up in North Carolina. And it's the Carolina Times. I think they said locally known as the Times. But I wasn't, you know, familiar with the paper, and I haven't been able to hang out in North Carolina in a long... Oh, actually, the retreat. But anyway, I haven't hung out for, like, gallivanting and playtime. It's been a long time. So I checked, and I guess they have some of his work online. Perhaps if you're in North Carolina, If you're at like a North Carolina institution, A&T, one of the HBCUs down there, Winston-Salem State, or even some of the bigger institutions, you probably will be able to access that this at their library, probably even online. But the paper that I went to and pulled up, it's kind of small, so I can't really see the data. I have to see if I can zoom in a little bit. But the thing that's in huge, bold face print, all caps, Negro home dynamited. And then they go on, they got a few other tidbits. Let's see, Durham white schools get $155,000 from county, but Negro schools get $21,000. And then they have the audacity to sit around. Negroes are lazy. You're lazy. Yeah, that's what it is. You just don't want to go to school. Lazy Negroes. I think that's a $100,000 difference. Importance of black journalists. So recognizing Mr. Edmonds, who passed away. Andre Harrell passed away this week. Entertainment mogul. He signed lots of black musical geniuses over a long period of time. I think Sean P. Diddy Combs owes a lot of his success to being signed by Mr. Harrell and a number of other, like lots of folks. It's who's who. I think Mary J. Blige and just tons of folks. Black artists that he signed, but he passed away at the age of 59. That's why I said that is a pretty regular thing, having particularly black people, victims of white supremacy, dying way early, not getting all the years and activity and vitality and, you know, time with their family and more entertainment goals that he, you know, wanted to accomplish, or just life goals. You don't get all that time. Look at Mr. Fuller publishing books on into his 80s. You don't get all that time. Deliberate system of white supremacy. So he passed away this week at the age of 59. And then Little Richard passed away. Speaking of black musical geniuses. And in fact, the system of white supremacy, the enormity and how that impacts everything that we do on this planet, all areas of people activity. Little Richard, we could do whole programs about racism in his music career, but for all of his celebrity and fame, I have heard him give interviews where he said that he, you know, sung and did his music where he was doing the vocals at really, really fast. Like if you listen to Tutti Frutti and some of the songs that he's known for that are really popular, like he's doing them really fast, and he's doing them that way because racists would just go and steal his music and songs, and then they would become a hit. Like, oh, forget Little Richard. Let's hear, you know, Elvis or some other white person come and sing the exact same song. And he wouldn't get any, no royalties, no nothing, no sampling, none of that. And the white person blows up. So, I mean, his whole career is evidence, the system of white supremacy. And I think he had said that directly, maybe not using the term white supremacy, but white folks mistreating black artists, long history of that. But Little Richard passed away this week as well, in addition to many other people on the planet. We've got regular death tickers, so death certainly being normalized in the system of white supremacy. But thought that was important to point out. Next, let's see. So Retreat, Washington, D.C. We're still going to see if we can make a go. Kind of had to take some time to reassess, but we will see if folks are down, if it, you know, is allowed. I'm kind of feeling the same way the colleges are. I'll have to see if that will even be allowed by the time that we get to August 5th through August 9th. Already had folks who have signed up to be there. Vegan meals, yoga, talk about all this craziness. Might be the first time some of us are getting out to do anything cool with other people. But looking forward to it, particularly since they've said a lot of, you know, this is diet related issues and that type of thing. Get some exercise, eat better. If you are interested, there is information on the blog, racism-notes.blogspot.com. You can drop an email. I will give the date for the deadline for deposits. It got moved back just because of all of the craziness with the virus, but we will extend the deadline to a date. I will let folks know. But looking forward to hanging out in D.C., enjoying the summertime if we can. Man, drop an email if you need more details. UntilJustice@gmail.com. Let's see. the social distancing in New York. Thought that was important for a number of reasons. I had someone ask me on Facebook maybe a month ago. They said, and this person seems to, or they post a lot of content which would suggest that they do not think that the coronavirus is real. Important for context. So this person asked, Gus, are you afraid or concerned that black people will be labeled like the carriers of the virus and or once they start all this testing that you'll have a lot of false positives and you'll have lots of black people testing positive and they'll just herd all the black people up into some sort of quarantine and say, oh man, you all are all infected. You got the cooties and you'll be in quarantine for the next, you know, whatever, 5-10 years, Guantanamo Bay type situation. And I said, well, you know, we are in a system of racism, white supremacy, so they do a lot of that anyway, right? I mean, they are talking about releasing folks from greater confinement, Bill Cosby, R. Kelly. They do a lot of that anyway, so that would just be more of the same. And in fact, I said, I don't even think they would need the virus if they just wanted to lock up black people. Like, whites have already shown themselves like supremely capable of doing it for centuries. In fact, locking up black people, like that's one of our favorite activities, shackling Negroes. So I don't know that they would need all of this if they just, if that's the end goal, we just want to lock up a lot of black people. Like, wow, that is a lot for, you know, the same old, same old. But I mean, it could be. But he asked if I was concerned about that. And I said, no, I have seen such an appalling lack of taking this serious in the area known as the United States that I don't even see the quarantine pens. Like, it would take some effort. Like, people would, I just don't see any evidence of that thus far. Now, I saw this report. I said, well, I'll at least mention those together, even though no one was being quarantined or even shackled in what Borough President Adams was discussing. They were just given citations, summons, if I want to be specific, and nothing should be minimized, like deaths shouldn't be minimized, interactions with race soldiers shouldn't be minimized, but this wasn't like thousands of people. I think they said it was 35 out of the 40 people. I'll even go up, I'll say 85 out of 100, but I think it might have been lower than that. But 85 out of 100 people who got summons were black and non-white people. So noteworthy, but not handcuffed beaten. I think you did have some incidents which standard operating procedure where, what, where's your mask? Did you say something, coon? And, you know, all the way. But I mean, that sort of thing happens all the time. So yeah, at this point, no, I'm still not concerned about black people being rounded up and quarantined. Although Dr. Sylvia Hood Washington, she did raise concerns about that. And we are in a system of white supremacy. I would never really be too surprised, even if someone in the next 5 minutes for nothing related to the coronavirus at all just said, you know, all Negroes outside in the van. We are in a system of racism. This is the context of white supremacy. So white people could do that right now if they wanted to. Next, let's see. But I did think it was important, President Adams pointing out the white supremacy racism and how all of that was being enforced, because they had photographs of white people hanging out at the park in New York in their sunbathing, Welsing moment, all close together and huddled up. Nobody had a mask on. They're outside, don't want to get, you know, suntan lines on your face from having a stupid mask on. So they're outside having a blast. Didn't look like anybody was being given summons, pepper sprayed, any of the other things that were happening. And then you give a different parallel, the way victims of white supremacy were being treated, sometimes where they were not even out at a park in a big group. It was just two people sitting out in front of a house. So system of white supremacy. I have recommended staying inside for many reasons. Let's see. Next, the school closings I thought was super important. They were talking about colleges specifically. I've seen several reports where college officials were saying they're about 50-50 on whether or not they think the semester, the fall semester, the next academic year, whether things will start on time, whether they'll have a session at all And I thought, wow, that is staggering on many levels. You know, if you're a student, if you're an employee at the university, college, any level, because I mean, they do employ sometimes, depending on how big the facility is, it can be, you know, thousands of people. Talking about Michael Vick, Blacksburg, Virginia, like Virginia Tech is the city of Blacksburg. So if Virginia Tech is not in operation, like, woo, I mean, Blacksburg looks like a ghost town in the summertime when things are kind of shut down. And yeah, that's a metaphor. Blacksburg is a relatively deserted place. You do not see a whole lot of folks, and there is basically no traffic at any time once school is not in session in Blacksburg, Virginia, Virginia Tech. If that were to shut down, man, HBCUs, like, wow. Winston-Salem State, North Carolina A&T, they've had all those reports about a number of historically black colleges and universities having a difficult time anyway. Like, wow. Could be extraordinary on just so many levels. As they were talking about, the staff members who work there, I remember lots of the schools, universities that I've been to, they do have a lot of black people who work in the kitchen or custodial workers and that type of thing. Like, to just have all those folks either sent home or uncertain, you know, as I just said, you know, are we going to have jobs this fall? Or, I mean, wow. Spectacular in terms of just the chaos and confusion and stress on just a number of different layers in terms of thinking about that. I don't have children, but if you're a parent and you've got a child and they're looking to go back, like, many things to consider there. If folks who are parents have thoughts, I know we've had folks who've talked about that, even some of the students who talked about that, and the chaos, not even being given a lot of information and having to move sometimes across country, given very short notice. So stress, say that again, very stressful times. No end in sight to that stress and anxiety. Next, let's see. So the situation with Ahmaud Arbery, speaking of dying, system of racism, white supremacy, I did not watch the video. I have no intention of watching the video or during that whole ridiculous spectacle of tweeting and doing all the hashtags and outrage. Like, we are under social distancing. The state of Washington is still under shelter in place order until the end of the month, according to Governor Inslee, suspected racist. He was running for president. He would have lost, too. Essentially, he did lose. They had suspected racist some tacky solidarity run, jog, walk here in Seattle. Now, we are, what is it? Have I done Seattle to Georgia? I have not done Seattle to Atlanta. I've done California. So we're like thousands of miles, literally, from Georgia, where Mr. Arbery was killed, murdered, and all of this is being adjudicated. Under the middle of the coronavirus crisis, that's the best thing that we can think of. We're going to get together in a big group and go out and run in honor of this Negro who was killed thousands of miles away. Not to mention the black people that are right here in Seattle, victims of white supremacy, racism, like, you know, the hell with those Negroes. But that Negro down there in Georgia, way, way down there in Georgia. I've never even been to Georgia. But yes, we will have a community fun run in his honor. Best plantation. I guess I still got to stick my chest out proud. But best plantation in the known universe, I guess. I did not keep up with all of this. I watched just enough to do my duty to say, oh, okay, I'm aware of the situation. What happened? They had the two race soldiers, father-son tandem, and they've been arrested. Okay. Seen this before. Doubtful that, you know, they'll be convicted of anything. It took months for them to even be arrested. And, you know, why wait this long? Even the tackiness abounded. They had, speaking of losers, they had former Vice President Joe Biden. This is an outrage. He was killed in cold blood and all of that. Like, once I start seeing that, because I think that happened before, with Trayvon Martin, where you had lots of race soldiers. They love that, to come out and, oh yeah, I can do some huckstering on this nigger's corpse, and oh, I love me some Trayvon Martin. Let me get my hoodie. Where's my hoodie at? They did. I mean, they had white people coming out putting on hoodies, and then they would get their dogs and put a hoodie on the dog too, and let's take a picture. We're outraged. This is for Trayvon. Come on, Fluffy, get in the picture. This is for Trayvon. Another round of that, I don't participate in any of that. The man, not Dr. Curry, talked about that. He was right, like, about this situation specifically. He was saying the same thing Dr. Curry wrote. Make sure I get the whole thing. For years, black men, black males, have been overwhelmed by the sight of their own murder. We have normalized the death of black males to such an extent in this country that the sight of a black male corpse inspires no outrage. This is evidence of our dehumanization. Dr. Tommy J. Curry, author, The Man Not, Race, Class, Genre, Dilemmas of Black Manhood. That's why I call all of this is just faux outrage. It's election year. You got people upset about the coronavirus. They're tired of talking about that. We talk about something else. Fine. Yes, black male got shot. It's just like old days. We can pretend it's back to how it used to be. Tell us about the Negro who died. Oh, you got video. Yes. Let's see the video of the Negro getting shot down in the street. I love it. Best thing ever. Take my mind right off the vibe. I'm done with all of that. I might loosely pay attention just to see what happens, but I've seen these racial theater. I have seen all of this before. Negro trauma drama. They'll get into the black male's background and see if they can find where he shoplifted a Tootsie Roll when he was in eighth grade and all of that. Typical system of white supremacy. They got the new hashtags to go with it and everything. Let's see. Last thing before we get to the call, I think. Well, second. We'll have one more. So two more things. Then we'll get to the callers. I said this last week, and I guess I'll need to say it each week. And I don't mind sharing with folks. We've been the Cows broadcasting for 11 grueling years. It has not been fun. And we have done the compensatory call-in for approximately 9 years. It has not been fun. We generally operate with Victims Guaranteed Qualified, VGQ, because I have not solved this problem and I am not an expert on white supremacy, racism, or anything else. I am still learning. So I do make a deliberate effort to not operate this platform as though I know it all. You know, shut up, coon. You don't know what you're talking about. Be quiet, fool. You don't know. Even if I don't agree with, you know, somebody else's perspective on, you know, whatever it is that we're talking about. Even, you know, in many instances, if I'm, you know, like 99% certain that what's being said is incorrect, I still try to be humble about things because I am still learning and I don't know everything. So I try to operate in that manner consistently. And hopefully that's been reflected over the 11 years. And so people give views, articulate positions that I do not agree with regularly. Sometimes even they articulate views that I don't even think are logical, but it's still Victims Guaranteed Qualified because you don't have to be logical. The system of white supremacy trains us to not be logical. All of that said, this is not ordinary times. That's what everyone has said all over the world. Emergency situation. I have said consistently for almost 2 months now, hey, this is emergency. We don't have time to waste. If you don't think the Cows is giving out constructive information, you are being misled. We're wasting time. We don't have time and energy to waste. Find another broadcast or just find something else to do with your time and energy. I mean, it's millions of problems, so it's no shortage of things to do. Turn that off, mute button, whatever. Close the tab and keep it pushing. That's what should be done. Given that we are under emergency conditions and everything should be super logical, this is one time where we're deviating. I thought I said this last week, but I'm getting adjusted, so I'm just going to say it weekly now. I don't care what anyone read in the CDC, particularly I don't care, and would prefer not to hear, and in fact am not going to listen to anybody. Whatever you read, how many other hours of studying and burning the midnight oil, as they say, that you have invested in coming up with your theory as to what this is, it's not the Rona, it's anything that remotely sounds like we shouldn't take this seriously. I don't care. Find another program. You can make another platform. You can write something out. Doesn't matter. But anything that's sounding like we shouldn't take this seriously, you're not welcome here. And the reason is, under emergency conditions, we should be following a lot of logic. I haven't heard anyone who's called in who has taken a position anywhere sounding like this is something that we shouldn't take seriously. The masks shouldn't be worn. They're ridiculous. Social distancing is ridiculous. They're lying about the hospitals. All of that. They're lying about the statistics about black people. All of that. To me, and I could be in error, none of that has sounded logical by the people who have presented those views. No one who has presented those views, anything sounding like we should not take this seriously, has said, oh, I'm a doctor. Or even, you don't have to be a doctor. I'm a medical professional. I'm a med student. I've been studying health and science for a number. No one said that. If you got credentials, you can put them out. And really, even if you got those credentials, I still would be looking at you because, wow, we have had a number of black medical professionals on, and they all think that this is legitimate. They all think this is serious. None of them saw any reason to doubt veracity of what's been reported about black people getting sick and how this is having a really devastating impact on black people, not just in the United States. So, unless you have a laboratory and you've done like years of research just on the coronavirus, years of research, I don't want to hear any of that. Find another program. Don't care what you read in the CDC. If it turns out that there is no coronavirus, I have no problem being the first person to step up and say I was wrong and was happy to be wrong to say, hey, we should take this serious until we have lots of really strong, irrefutable evidence that says, no, this is not the coronavirus and it's safe. You don't need a mask. Go out and hug everybody. Give them high fives. Throw out all that hand sanitizer. You don't need it. We can go back to doing it just the way we did. All going to the salad bar today, and we're going to use the same fork. Once you got all that data together, you got all that research, then you can step forward. Until then, mute button will be in effect. We're not doing that. So take it serious. That's all I can say. Take it serious until we have reason to not take this seriously. You can certainly have doubts. Racists lie about lots of things, and there is lots of confusion. I think that's a part of the racism too. I could be in error, but there, anytime there's a lot of confusion, I would tend to think, oh yeah, that's what racists intended. That's number one, keep people confused. There's a lot of confusion, a lot of lies being told. So absolutely, racists have created a situation where it's difficult to ascertain what's happening. Just try to do the best you can to follow logic, take things serious, follow logic, make the best decisions you can. Hopefully, the context of white supremacy is not a part of misleading folks. That's it. I said two more things. I was wrong because I forgot. We will be here. A part, hopefully, of getting accurate information is being able to talk to people in different parts of the world. Hopefully, this week we'll be able to do it correctly. We should have, let's see, Toyin Agbetu should be here from the United Kingdom Tuesday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Black Male in China should be back with us on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific. And then we should have our Global Sunday Talk on Racism this Sunday. If we can get all of our assignments, do everything as outlined. So we should have a lot of international participation this week from different areas of the globe. Again, we can come back and assess. What do we think is happening? What's going on? Unfortunately, I have started to see a few reports where in the UK, they're saying black people, this is having an alarming impact on black non-white people. Devastating impact, saying the same thing over there, and for a lot of the same reasons. Essential healthcare workers, so-called, where they're not getting to stay at home and all the rest of it. But We'll talk about that, hopefully, lots this week. So that means there will be lots of irregular times for the program. So I guess if you are at work, you might have something cool to listen to live while you are working. If you're working from home or what have you, we'll be on in the daytime. So you can tune in, take advantage, and speak to folks who are in different parts of the world. Now, last thing, the situation in Michigan. So last week they had the white protesters, suspected racists. They were yelling in enforcement officials' face and had their long rifles and firearms in the shutdown, going back to work, and Corona's a lie and all the rest of it. So this week they had State Representative Sarah Anthony. She got an escort by a group of, it seemed like it was mostly black people. Looked like it might have been one person with them who would have been classified as white. I'm not sure. Wasn't the best picture angle, and sometimes you can't really tell, and that's why I ask. But it looked like it certainly was a whole lot of folks who would not be accepted as white. And so they had their rifles and, you know, said that they wanted to provide security for her and all the rest of it. And I just thought, wow, Black Panthers, like black people going to the state capitol with firearms. White people changed the laws immediately. I said, so you at the Michigan State Capitol for 2 weeks have had white and non-white protesters showing up with guns, flanking lawmakers. Like, I cannot imagine white people allowing this to continue for any length of time, particularly with all of this. Like, it just sounds like, you know, any moment something bad is going to take place. I did see that different state officials, they were talking about exactly what I just said. We can change the laws to make it so that there are no firearms in the state capitol or on the state ground, so you couldn't stand outside and do all that brandishing either, which I thought they should have been talking about last week. Why did we have to wait till this week to get to, you know, the black people out there? But I'm not the most intelligent person still learning. That's it. If you could take about 5 minutes to share your thoughts, observations, suggestions, if you need more than 5 minutes, we should have lots of time, so you can wait until everybody's had at least one chance to speak, and then you can come back and give your additional thoughts, observations, suggestions. If you know you're in a loud area, which, I don't know, I don't think too many clubs and such are open now, so shouldn't be too many noisy environments. But if other folks are around in the house and what have you, if you could kind of get to a quiet area, use your mute button, that would be spectacular. And then you can mute if you have, you know, children breastfeeding to do and, you know, they're cooing, making a little noise. You can mute, do your mothering, parenting, and then once you're ready to share again, unmute, bam, and share your additional thoughts, observations. The number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If I could make my weekly request that we not use metaphors, that would be super appreciated. Race soldiers regularly will use comparisons, analogies, similes. They'll take two separate concepts and insist that they are identical, and frequently that is not the case. If we could make every effort to be explicit, direct about what it is that we want to say, that would be super appreciated. I will prompt about the metaphors. Thank you kindly. Last thing, that report about Brazil I thought was important. The two places in the Western Hemisphere with the highest reported death tolls from the COVID-19 crisis, Brazil, United States, highest by far, like not even close. Those also happen to be the two areas in the Western Hemisphere with the highest population of black people. Brazil, unless I've been misinformed, they have more black people there than we do here, and they seem to have an even more cavalier attitude about this whole thing. You heard the segment where the president, put your mask on, let's go outside, we're not doing all that lockdown. lots of black people, same situation, where they're not even in a situation where they can prop their feet up in the favela, check out Amazon, do a few orders. They're not even in that situation. Thought that was important, to trying to see if we can get some folks from Brazil on the program as well. Think that is super important. Look at this globally. Try to get the best logic understanding that we can. First, you folks who dialed in with a hand up, *61. If you have comments, questions to share, lines should be open. Proceed. Greetings, Emmy, fellow yogi. Practice today was killing it with the headstand. Let's see, I see folks who have hands up. I'm not sure if they're taking a moment. Again, we'll be here Tuesday. You have to check because we might have other times as well. But definitely Tuesday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Toyin Agbegtu joining us from the UK. He's been with us before. You can go back in the archives, 2011. He was here, but he should be here on Tuesday. Looking forward to chatting, getting his perspective, because they were kind of cavalier about things in the UK as well. Like when we did our Global Sunday Talk in March, Boris Johnson, that was when he was saying we're not doing a shutdown, like we're not doing all that stuff, and you know, the bars were still, the clubs were still open in London about a month and a half ago, and then I think within a few days, by the end of the month, he had gotten sick, Boris Johnson had got sick, and they did do the lockdown and all that stuff. So yeah, be interesting to hear more folks over there, hear their perspective, what they think about all this, how this is impacting black people there specifically, what their observations are on how this is, you know, being reported on what's happening in the States as well. But that is Tuesday. Looking forward. Let's see. Folks that have hands up, are they ready to roll or trying to get to a spot where they can speak?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Good evening. Good evening. So I want to talk about the, because I missed the, what do you call that now? The segment with the new segment. I came on a bit late. And I was listening to you talking, and I know that I was reading the paper, not the paper, but the online news, and they were saying that the British nurses and stuff, they don't have PPE. They were lacking that also. And also that, as you were saying too, was current where you were saying that, the black British is the majority that was getting ill from the virus. And you mentioned Ahmed Arbery, the guy that got shot in Dreadwood with his two guys. And I agree with the, just like watching those, like, smut, the right term, but watching those kinds of images over and over, and not just that, but I find it like it's like a, almost like a, it reminds me of when Obama was in office, and I find like it was like a lot of images of like black men and black death on TV, and just a constant recurrence of that over and over, and not just the black death, but nothing being done about it. You know, and I just find it like traumatizing. So I find that on top of the coronavirus and how it's killing black people mostly. And it's just like, it's a bit much. I find it very traumatic. And as I said, I think it's like psychological warfare. And yeah, man, it, I don't know. It's pretty heavy stuff. And I also wanted to mention, the part you said something about doing your part, the thing that you've been doing for 11 years, podcasting. And I started a podcast, and after like a week, I stopped. I was like, yo, and I literally thought to myself, like, yo, how did Dust do this for 11 years? I was like, yo, how did he do this? So I stopped when I started back. I got motivated some way, but yeah. But yeah, that's all I want to say. That's what we talk.
It has not been fun. I will say that. I think I said that already. Say it again. It has not been fun. What's the name of your podcast?
I saw the Rush Time Podcast.
The Rush Time Podcast.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. Stay inspired. Stay constructive. It can be, grueling at times.
But it's a bit therapeutic, I think. It's therapeutic, though. I find it therapeutic.
Getting
my ideas out there and stuff.
That is important. That is important, being able to articulate your views, get your suggestions out there. And yeah, because we get muffled so regularly. So, yeah. Bravo. Stay motivated. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in. Smutflix, that's what we called them before. Smutflix. Yep, that's the exact terminology. Some folks have called it racial pornography, terror porn. Those are some of the exact same terms, because it's like there's a level of sexual gratification to it. I think we talked about that with some level with Dr. Welsing as well, because she was talking about that when President Obama was still in the White House, and we were having the daily stream of, who did I just say? Philando Castile, blah, 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 Alton Sterling, Walter Scott, Eric Garner, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, just every day, just have that on a regular loop, and then compounding that extreme, and I've heard that from a number of Cal's listeners, that it's just been exhausting, traumatizing, exhausting, where they feel like it's impacted their sleep, and absolutely, like, it's so much stress, it's just unending stress, because you don't know, it's so confusing. Are we going to be under lockdown? Are they going to lift it? You know, are things getting better? Is it going to be shut down again? Am I going to have a job? Are they doing rent control or not? Are we going to get, it's endless. It's endless. So if you are feeling stressed, that is millions, if not billions, of folks on the planet right now that are dealing with that in some way, shape, form. I would try to find ways to mitigate. Again, alcohol, I don't think is a good one. There's many reasons why I say sobriety would be best, but I don't think alcohol, the intoxicants, I don't think that is going to really help. In fact, I think that might cause more problems. I think there's evidence that disrupts sleep patterns and weight gain, lots of other issues. Cigarettes either, like trying to get quality rest, try to eat well, try to drink more water, get away from the sugar, things that are just going to cause more problems anyway. See if you can get outside to get a walk. You can still do that. Social distancing. If you are experiencing anxiety, it is to be expected and a part of all of this. Trying to figure out ways to mitigate that as best we can without being destructive to ourselves and other people. That's got to be a big part of our code in dealing with all this. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, if you have comments, observations, suggestions, lines should be open.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings to the guests. Not to the guests, but to everybody. I would just like to, I just have a thought on one particular incident that took place this week that you mentioned on the pre-program. The incident in Lansing, Michigan, that was stated that a non-white black female elected official felt threatened, and I believe she requested assistance, and it was rendered by non-white black people. Majority of them were. I'm not sure about everybody. My thoughts are on whether or not it was more symbolic, more so than anything. When she left her place of work, did she require and was rendered security? When she went to her place of residence, did she have security? I'm just wondering. I'm just asking questions because one of the essential attributes of counter-racist codification is that in the attempt of solving problems, you don't create more problems, especially for yourself. let alone talking about others. The non-white black male who was interviewed, I only heard some verbiage of racism, white supremacy, but it was not really in depth to the point that would render what actions that they took. And I don't know everything. I don't know everything, but I could only just hope that they didn't do something that would cause problems for themselves individually. Because I would say if it was just done from a symbolic standpoint, that they may have some problems personally, individually, for themselves. And those are just my thoughts. I could be wrong, but it's just my thoughts on it. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
There has been that sort of pattern before. Black person, firearm, black male or female, with firearms going out, calling themselves, protesting or providing security against racist man, racist woman, where it ends up causing them personal problems. That certainly was the case for Bobby Seale, Huey P. Newton, a number of black people, not just Black Panther Party, but that has happened repeatedly. Sarah Anthony, state representative, Democrat in Michigan, I'm not sure if she requested this armed escort or if they organized it, offered, and she accepted. Having to go back to double check. But yeah, I'm not sure if she solicited this, but we will see how all that. And she did.
No, I don't think she. Did I say that? I don't. I hope I didn't say that. That she requested it. I did.
I think you did. But either way.
Yeah. Well. I mean, it was a situation where she didn't say no. Don't. She didn't turn it down. I put it that way.
Right.
Because I saw the video of her walking to her place of work. But I'm just wondering if somebody's life is threatened, it's going to be on a continuous basis until the threat is no longer exists. I mean, did she have it on the way leaving out? Did she have it as she went to her place of residence? Because certainly somebody wants to kill you, they don't have to do it out in front of a Capitol building. It can happen anywhere, you know, and so it would have to be on a consistent basis, I would figure, unless I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. I would figure that it would be, you know, consistently, not just that one particular instance. And if so, that would make it be symbolic.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. Context of white supremacy. Representative Sarah Anthony in Michigan. Other folks, if you have commentary, questions, observations, suggestions, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate.
Hello.
Greetings, Irie in Louisiana.
Buja, and that is a comedic term that I just learned, is a salutation. I've been taking time here and there to learn some metanetter. Which is just interesting, and I've also decided that I want to learn certain terms to share with my partner and my son so we can have our own code In case of emergency, along with some limited American sign language that we know. I hope everybody's doing okay tonight. So anyhow, I was just listening to the archives on YouTube with some white lady who probably passes as black or, you know, I don't know what the term would be for that, but she's some type of musical historian or expert. And I heard retired firefighter, say that white people are cut off a branch to watch the tree fall. And I know that's a metaphor, but I agree with it wholeheartedly. And the meaning of that to me that I interpret is they'll sacrifice the entire world, human race, and anything living, non-living alike, for comfort and sport. And I'm saying that because today I was driving on my part-time gig, whatever, you know, doing deliveries, and I was getting close to base, you know, to pick up some more stuff. And I observed some silver luxury cars gunning for the pedestrian zone with a woman and child crossing with a basket. And so I was like, my gosh, like, I don't know, I just got the sensation that they really wanted to terrorize this woman and child. So, of course, they ran with all they had and made it across, you know, within about 7 seconds of him crossing the pedestrian zone. And then, so I was like, okay, you're obviously a crazy person. I didn't know if he was black, white, or whatever. I'm like, let me hurry up, get around you so I can get where I need to go without incident. Well, of course I couldn't. Because why? Tacky, trashy, terroristic. So he, in turn, didn't have enough fun with that and decided to hurry up and get over in the turning lane in front of me, which would have caused me to either impact him at the rate of speed I was going to get away from him from behind, or have to, just something bad would have happened. So I have a pretty good vehicle, and I'm more than a defensive driver. So I went around him and got in front of him, and then I saw a white male and a white woman laughing at the occurrence. So I jumped out. I did. I jumped out, and I got my phone, and I took a picture. And the smile went away, and that was a risk. Yeah, now that I think about it, but I took a picture, and I reported him to the non-emergency line police department, and I let him know I had the picture, and I let him know what he did to me, but more importantly, what he did to those pedestrians. And, you know, it's just really disturbing. This is like the fourth time that I've had an incident on the road doing this delivery thing where people either want to challenge me in a race, or they're just driving because of, you know, they're just doing, you know, crazy and homicidal things. So I want to also say, listen, like, other than coronavirus, you know, there's also the chance of vehicular homicide out here. Please don't have your kids out in these streets. If they don't have to be, please. It's not worth it. I wish I didn't have to work, because right now I'm really shaking. And I don't have high blood pressure problems, but I feel my pulse elevated in my chest. I really do. And, you know, some funny stuff I found out about this week. Microsoft, of all organizations or corporations, is paying certain people that have, quote, survived corona, whatever that, you know, I guess they live past it, without complications. Anyhow. So they're paying people for samples of their blood or whatever to analyze it. Out in New Orleans, you know, they're also paying people, like, whether you're sick or not, and you know it's black folks. Nasal swab, $25 for that, $100 for your blood, if you let them have your blood, and so much for some other thing. I can't recall, but it's just wow. Wow. And oh, one last thing. There was a report, a headline I saw on Google where I think it was CNN and a couple other people reporting it, that now you can catch corona or pop. It might be possible to get it through semen. And I'm like, okay, so are y'all saying that this is now an STD as well as a respiratory disease? You know, I'm going to end my term real soon, but I want to say, I know you don't want to hear about chemtrails and white people should leave, but I do. I wish something would happen where they would leave or they would just be gone. I'm tired. I'm frustrated. And then I do believe they're messing with the weather. It's May. We good in May. Why is the weather almost 40 degrees some days in the South in May? And why? Why are y'all messing with the weather? Haven't y'all done enough? Like, even if corona isn't something they perpetrated, the fact that they knew what they knew and didn't act or did act a certain way is complicity. That's planning. So now y'all got to mess with this weather, too. You know, I have an outdoor garden, can't even really do that because we missed the harvest season being inside, or the planting season being inside for real, and now it's cold. The plants don't even know what to do. They're just killing everything, and I'll mute my line, and y'all have a good night. Peace and love.
Wow. I'm so sorry. That is like lethal terror. I mean, he could have killed the other pedestrians, that mom with her family, attempted family. You could have, you know, I mean, man, I mean, sorry, it's kind of cheap, but I mean, geez, it's horrible you had to experience that. I can feel the energy in terms of, you said, just how it had, you know, upset. I would be upset. I mean, just hearing about it is disgraceful. I think that's spectacular black self-respect in the midst of all of that, because you're jangled. These situations where you didn't plan anything, it's not like you came out of the house saying, you know, I'm looking for reckless drivers, road ragers, so that I can, you know, report. That was not your plan. You were just going about your business, doing whatever. And these race soldiers, a pair of them, they're out, oh, for giggle. And they got racist jokes. I was just talking about that earlier. They got racist jokes talking about running over black people. And it's a video game. And, oh, you, that's a two. You get a whole family. That's bonus points right there. You hit the baby, too. So to even fake like that. Now, we're in the middle of a crisis and all this. And it's not, oh, we're all, what's the tacky when they say, we're all in this together. It's not, you know, let me slow down and, oh, my goodness, sister, can I help you across the street? Do you need an extra mask? Oh, okay. I got a KFC gift card for you. No. Let's try and run them all over. No empathy. I just was talking about that. That's why I said you can contrast that with all this phoniness with, oh, we love Mr. Aubrey. Let's have a fun run. And he's like, get out of here. And then after he can't run them over, it's, oh, let's see if we can get her too. Run her off. They're like, man. That is the system of white supremacy. I am so glad to have it repeated, even though it's, you know, horrendous circumstances, but to have it repeated, if you don't have to have, if you have offspring and they're, you know, driving age, whatever, if you don't have to be out and about, stay in. Even if you're not a so-called child, you're an older person, fine, stay in. It's not really a good time. That drag racing, she said, being out doing deliveries, and people are challenging her to drag race. I've seen multiple reports, because you do have more people staying in. They were saying, like, in the LA Times and other places where they're still under lockdown, that you've got a lot less traffic. So you can be out on the freeway and it's no cars. So they said people have been taking advantage and going like 100 miles an hour. They said they had like an 87% increase. I think that was the exact statistic given. An 87% increase in speeding tickets given for people going over 100 miles an hour, based on what it was this time last April and March. And they said that they just have seen multiple reports, like people taking advantage, nobody on the streets, let's go drag race. It is not time to drag race. It is not time for joyriding. Stay in the house. if you don't have to. As I think I've been saying it pretty close to that way. It's a whole lot of things beyond the coronavirus. You got armed race soldiers and drag race. I mean, anywho, again, that is disgraceful, and I think that is a spectacular illustration of black self-respect to be able to call the enforcement officials and report these folks. Hopefully not gonna, you know, I'll have appropriate expectations, but hopefully they'll be ticketed. Talk about issuing summons, like all of that. I think I have seen one report where they do suggest if you encounter, unfortunately, that sort of reckless, dangerous motorist where they're doing those type of things. I think I have seen some reports where they encourage you be the person to stop and just let them go on. Like, you stop if you can get the camera photo from right there, but just boom, you stop and let them ride on. You can stop for 5 minutes or whatever, do some breathing exercises, calm down, make sure the family's okay, or, you know, whatever you want to do. Call the police in that time. But yeah, park and ride on. Let them get on up the road and do all that other stuff, and just more distance. More. After we were talking about that, quicker you can get distance, quicker you can get distance. Not that I'm criticizing like A+ all the way around, but I think I have heard that suggested. If something happens on the road with another motorist, like, you be the person to stop and let them keep on boogieing. That way you can increase distance that way. But above anything, I'm so sorry that you had to deal with that. I hope you can take some time to just relax, do some deep breathing, drink some water. Drinking water helps lower your blood pressure. So drink some water, do some deep breaths, sit quietly. Excellent on the learning languages. You can communicate, have a code with your children. Excellent way to use your time and energy. That is much better than Netflix. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks we missed completely. I'd say folks might be waiting a while. I see some other hands, so if they need a moment to get to area where they can speak. Again, I don't have children. That's another illustration what we just heard. I don't have children. I have pushed a stroller in my time on the planet with a young child. When I say young, like one. So really small. And the anxiety that I felt, just like, because I've been out in the street just as a black male, and I've been in the crosswalk where that happened, which he just described. I was in the crosswalk by myself. The lights were flashing. I had, in fact, as tacky as it sounds, I was in a red, black, and green crosswalk in Seattle. They have a few of those. They have rainbow crosswalks in the Capitol Hill LGBTQ center, and then they have red, black, and green crosswalks in the central district. That's where the black people live, or used to before racial dislocation. But I was in the red, black, and green crosswalk with the yellow lights flashing. I had pressed the button so I could walk. White man was completely stopped. He was at zero. He looked and saw me in the crosswalk, and then boop, hit on the accelerator. Boom, and then, oh, I'm so sorry. And I'm just looking at him the whole time, like, exactly what she just went, like, you saw me in the crosswalk, the lights are flashing, you were stopped, it's not even like you were going, and not that you were at a total zero, and slammed on, like, that's my lived experience anyway, and I've seen that with a number of black people, and they've had reports about black people, it being more dangerous for them to cross the street, it taking more time for them to cross the street. So the limited amount of times when I've been pushing a stroller, like, man, I just felt like vulnerable. I mean, man, it would just take a really long time to cross the street. I remember getting there and almost wanting to wait until it was no cars at all, like, not have to trust anybody, and then try to get across as quickly as possible. Like, system of racism, total terrorism. I do not have children, offspring for a reason. Get out our reminder since we have all of the irregular broadcasts. So I already said Tuesday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. That's Toyin, I beg to, UK. Friday, our black male listener in China should be back with us. That'll be 3 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific. And then Sunday, we should be back with our global Sunday talk on racism. So we should be able to get lots of folks in different parts of the globe to hear how they're being impacted, what type of stimulus, if any, they got, what are the restrictions look like, what's the impact on black people in those respective locations. We'll be looking forward, even though we will not be on at the regular times for a lot of those programs, but hopefully constructive. Let's see. Other folks with us that we have missed, if you have a hand up.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. I just researched, well, did a Google, SEC, Southeastern Conferences. Those colleges are planning to reopen, meaning they're going to, I guess, put in restrictions or whatever to reopen. Just wanted to leave that comment, and may all y'all stay safe. Thank you.
Much obliged. Southeastern Conferences. So that's like, like University of Georgia, University of Florida, University of Tennessee. Those are like some of the bigger schools. That's what I mean. Like you talk, some of those schools are like 40,000. Like they are massive. I can't think of all the University of Kentucky. That's another big one. I went to that school, or I took a visit there. But I mean, that's a lot of like
Alabama.
Yep. And those are like, some of those are like the huge money schools. When he just mentioned Alabama, I mean, that's like millions, if not billions of dollars for their professional, but it kind of is their NCAA football program. Same thing for Florida. It's already said that one, I think, and some of the others that are in the SEC. So I am certain that they will have it. I mean, that's like beyond just, you know, professors and deans sitting around saying, oh, yes, we would like, you know, to have the Crimson Tide be in session for the fall. That's like CBS and ESPN and a whole lot of other entities beyond the campus that, you know, also will be saying, oh, yes, we would like our $1 billion. Let's see if we can get this online. And that's another one. The racism, white supremacy, which is the same thing I would say anyway. When we start talking about football and all the rest of it, now Alabama has a whole lot of black people on their football team, unless I'm mistaken. And University of Florida, that's down there with a retired firefighter, and University of Kentucky and Mississippi State. All of those, they got a lot of black children on that program. I could easily say, now, we got billions of dollars. They're going to get brain damage anyway. How concerned are we about their health? Like, we don't even want to pay them. We don't even want to give them. We got billions of dollars, and we got some of, they have reports for years that you got some of these athletes are starving. They can't even afford to get food. They had one of the players at the University of Connecticut. That's not an SEC school, but they were at the Final Four for basketball, and he said, I didn't even have food to eat, man. I was starving, and we were in the championship game. If you don't even care about these players enough to give me a, here's a grilled cheese sandwich. Here you go. They're my favorite coon. Have an extra potato chip on me. If you don't even care about us enough of that, why am I going to think that you are going to do the correct thing when it comes to the coronavirus and judging out the risk-reward, my Negro life, your billion-dollar football program? That's why I'm going to say that again. No need to participate in football. Add that to the list now. I got corona, CTE, whole lot of reasons. No black people need to participate in that. We can let that go completely. Like, I don't even need to think about whether or not you all are going to be playing in the fall. I am good. No brain damage or virus for me. How are you even going to do that? All the touching and contact and heavy breathing and such that you got. Anywho, much obliged for the report, ma'am. We'll have to see how all that goes for August. Rapidly approaching August. Other folks who dialed in, if you have comments to share. I guess while we're waiting for other folks, if you have a hand up or no, other folks who, if you have additional comments, suggestions, feel free.
Yes, the white male head football coach of the University of Alabama is, if not the highest paid, is one of the highest paid state officials in the state of Alabama.
Yep. That is the case at most of the major, a lot of the schools that we just mentioned. It's not just the SEC and a lot of the big Power Five, I think they call it ACC. I'm sure my alma mater, University of Washington, right here in Seattle, I'm sure that's the case for many, many the predominantly white institutions across the country. And that's why I said that's, you know, kind of a big one. Is school going to be open in the fall? College and universities, are they going to be open? Like, it's many components to it. The athletic component is big. People just trying to finish up their degree. People that are working there, employees, like, it's big component for many reasons. Like I said, I don't have offspring, but man, like, I would be thinking about that a lot if I did have children, if they were anywhere in that school age range. That would be weighing on my mind heavily. I've been seeing a lot of parents talking about the stress. That's why I said there's so much to stress about with all of this. Other folks, comments, suggestions, questions they needed to get in? Grant, we'll give folks little, I do see other folks with hands up. I guess they're getting their thoughts together, or maybe they need to make sure they're in an area where it is quiet. Thankfully, I have not had to deal with being, I know we've had like guests and just, you know, listeners, victims that I have spoken with who have talked about that being whatever you want to call it, quarantined, confined with your family members, people that you care about ostensibly, but just that can be challenging if they're doing a dance challenge or being rowdy on the Instagram feed and you're trying to study or learn some new languages. Like, I can empathize, even though I have thankfully not had to deal with that. I guess I did also want to make sure I got in because they were talking about food shortages. That might be good to kind of report in terms of your location, in terms of what you are seeing. I know here in terms of food shortages, that is not the case. Like at all, like it was briefly in like when all of this first started, like the middle of March, towards the end of March, that was the case. Like you could not get like staples. Toilet paper was all gone. Paper towels were all gone. Yeast was all gone. Flour was all gone. Spaghetti sauce, like lots of those things. Basic staple. Here, I was telling Dr. Rasayan, tofu was all gone, like all of the health stuff evaporated, like couldn't get any of that stuff at all. That has slowly not been the case, and I would say over the past couple of weeks or so, it almost looks kind of normal, like at least food-wise. Like the hand sanitizer and stuff might get a little low from time to time, but like food things are pretty much back to normal for the most part. For the most part, like it's not too many items that you can go in and they're not going to have or not going to have in great abundance. Like most of it kind of looks the way it did before all of this started. At least that's for Seattle. Let's see. Folks still spectating or other folks have thoughts, observations to share?
There was a unusual murder, attempted murder. Down here in South Florida, 18-year-old non-white black male murdered his, hopefully I get it right, murdered his non-white black male brother and came very close to killing his white male father. Down here.
I thought it was unusual for those reasons, especially with the attempt on the white father. And in turn, he was captured primarily because he ran out in front of traffic. I think they were saying on purpose. He doesn't look in too good of a condition from what I've seen. They had him transported on a helicopter, and he had the oxygen tube down his trach, so that means he was getting assistance in breathing. But which doesn't spell out too good as far as his health is concerned. But I thought it was unusual as far as this black male killing his white male father.
Have to get more details, but yeah, that is
18 years old.
Race soldiers are dangerous. We'll have to get more information on that one. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in that we missed totally. Looks like we have some folks who are on the Skype line. If you are with us.
Peace. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hey, how's it going, everyone? This is Disturbed Scientist calling in from North Florida. I just wanted to report on what was going on this weekend. We had a protest in North Florida for the shooting of Ahmaud. It was a great protest. We had about 200 people out there, and lots of signs, lots of solidarity. And it was just a good scene to be in. And thinking about, I actually saw the video. So when I saw the video, me seeing the video made me realize just more than I normally realize. The video was traumatizing. There was a lot of press out there, and we demanded that victims of police crimes in our city were also brought to justice as well. We have a number of officers on the force currently who have killed, one officer in particular has killed about two or three people this year so far. We have multiple officers that keep getting involved in situations where they keep shooting and killing people in our city. So the mob situation has just caused it to grow even larger. The call for action. So I just wanted to kind of report on that. That's about it.
Much obliged, sir. Caller in Florida. Lots of Florida folks. If I may ask, you said it was a great protest. Hundreds of folks turned out. What exactly, other than having a really solid number of participants, what exactly made it a great protest?
I think just the fact that there was so much media attention to it, and that was the biggest one we've had in a while. And just the media attention and the fact that it was put on in like, we did it in like a day and a half when it all started. So it's actually going to help a lot of the organizations get more members so we can do more aggressive organizing in terms of trying to get some of these racist cops arrested. So I think on that note, it was really good.
Okay, right on. Get more support, more folks galvanized to try to do some specific things, see if you can get some of the race enforcement officers, suspected race soldiers, get them fired or terminated, some sort of accountability for their conduct. Did they have any issues about people, like getting 200 people gathering, like in terms of, I don't know if Florida's still under restriction or, like, was there any?
Yeah, that's the funny thing. We're definitely under restriction right now, but I think the way the city's been acting, they've just been letting people protest because we've had some right-wingers protest about opening up the country, so they've been letting people protest. And for this particular protest, we actually wanted everyone to stay in their cars, but you know, people, they do what they do, so everyone ended up outside the cars, you know, all over the courthouse lawn. So it's a pretty big area. We're in front of a courthouse lawn. So, I mean, we got about 200 people. We try, you know, we pretty much told everyone to social distance. So I think everyone's a good distance apart in the area. But the police and the police in the city, they have not been stopping protests because they understand what would happen. So they've been trying to just let everyone do what they want.
Oh, okay. Good to know. I was very curious about that, just in terms of, you know, if there are any regulations or enforcement about that. Keep us updated. Like you were saying, if it is able to galvanize, so you all are able to get more support in terms of more members, more people to help get things done, to try to address some of the problems with enforcement officials, suspected race soldiers, in your part of Florida. I know Dr. Welsing, guest on this program many times, she suggested non-white people not be involved in those type of protests out front because it could put you in harm's way, where it's not going to solve any problems without creating any new problems, where it's going to create some new problems where you might not be here, you might be in greater confinement, lots of things can happen that are beyond your control. I would definitely say that for the current circumstances, because just as what was stated with the our caller who just dialed in from Florida, they could decide that they're not going to enforce ordinances against protesting, or we're not going to enforce social distancing. We're not doing it. You know, white people are out. I don't use the term right wing, but if white people are out protesting and, you know, this is a lie and open things back up, they might not enforce it. But I have seen numerous examples over a number of years of where there is not the same type of enforcement when white people protest as opposed to black people protesting. It would be us would be the day that they decide, oh, wait a minute, yeah, social distancing. Yeah. No protesting. It wouldn't surprise me at all. In fact, yeah, that is not my conclusion, that racists have to do what they do because they know what will happen. I have seen what happens when race soldiers, enforcement officers, badge or no, when they decide to trounce and trample a group of black people. Most of the time, what happens is, there you go. Unless I'm misinformed, that's what happens most of the time. It's not like there's we don't have, unless I've been misinformed, there is no black liberation army that leaps out and grabs white people and puts them in the head like, what are you doing? Beating up black, get out of here, and kicks them in the butt. That doesn't happen. They go upside black protesters' heads, snatch the signs, and, you know, that's what I said. Nothing happens. Much obliged. And again, that is VGQ because I don't know everything. I could be misinformed, but that's a stance that I've taken pretty consistently for years about the protesting. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, commentary, if we missed you completely, if you have commentary, proceed.
May I be heard?
Other caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to
guests, the hosts, the listeners and callers. That reminded me about the, or something similar to the protest, but the opposition to the stay-at-home, I guess, guidelines. I'm seeing a lot more white people, white women, being vocal with no mask out in public while they're doing media reports saying, I want to open my salon back up. You see one white woman on the news reports tearing up some kind of paperwork, and she being called a rebel. I think this one was over in Texas. Well, I guess the governor made a sole decision to, I guess, get her out of jail or confinement, you know. And that right there, once again, has more white supremacy being practiced, and which is why I think a person like that who's been trained and produced to exhibit racism says, you know, nobody's going to tell me what to do. And hey, look at what ended up happening. So one thing that I also learned from the situation in Georgia was the systematic racism being practiced, where they said the suspected racist or the race soldier, I think he used to be an officer, his connections, the connections are massive. People, I guess, have been told to withdraw themselves from the case. And once again, I don't think victims of racism or the people that call in to this program should be surprised at that. But it's definitely more signs of the system of white supremacy being practiced. Another one was from the clips where I think it was there was a lady, I guess, that was talking about the disproportionate effect on black people, and as far as black people, I guess, getting health care or something like that. She used a term that I disagree with. She said that black people have they're fighting distrust. That's exactly how she said it. And I don't think that's accurate. Like, I don't know what's meant by that anyways, fighting distrust. White supremacy is being practiced. Like, it's not, we are fighting distrust. Now we don't have, well, we do have a suspicion, I think, many of us, of white people practicing racism throughout history. And yeah, that could be a cause of not trusting white people in these institutions. But I don't, just the way that was worded, I think that's very slick and out of an act of racism. And as far as I think that was the segment on the taking the classes online, and the students wanted to, I guess, get a refund or they want a discount. See, so once again, like that demanding, arrogant nature of racists, and even though it's something that apparently, you know, the people can't really help, like, you're going to have to try and get your education through some other means, and they're still like, I got to get something out of this, you know. And that reminds me of one last thing I want to say, is that here at the University of Florida, they actually, within 2 months, it took at least one or two white people. All right, they decided to put together a petition to not pay rent while they're on campus, and that thing actually got passed within a few weeks, to where they don't have to pay any rent. I guess, you know, throughout the duration of the semester or the next year or something like that. But yeah, but the fact that they can get things done in a short amount of time like that, and I just remember hearing a guy say, "Well, you know, we don't want to mess up their future, and we don't want them to get bad credit. These are students of the future," things like that, and it's definitely white power being practiced. And that's all I have for now. Thanks for allowing me to share.
White power in full effect, absolutely, and in short time. Like, it's, I think that's been on display in a number of different instances throughout this situation, where rapidly
can deploy resources and get things in place for white people, like no rent, rest of the academic year. Bang, got that approved, no problem. Next, moving on, like, when they want to solve problems, when they get serious, white people can get things done. Let's see. Let's get the school report. Oh, and I agree, too, the fighting distrust. It is fighting white supremacy racism, which is being practiced. I was thinking Henrietta Lacks during the whole segment. Like, we're not fighting distrust. Hopefully, we have some level of suspicion in dealing with these folks to help keep us safe and ask correct questions if you have to deal with these folks at all. That is not fighting distrust. I think that was how she phrased it in the report. Much obliged, our caller in Florida, callers in Florida. The person that we heard from before, I just muted your line because it was noise, so if you want to respond or chime back in, I'll unmute as well. And I saw that report, the caller in Florida at the courthouse. I saw the report about the woman in Texas defiant the black male in China. He should be back with us this coming Friday. He said 2 months ago now that a part of why he predicted this was going to be a much bigger problem in the U.S., part of it, he said, is because you all, by nature, are kind of distrustful of the government, public officials coming out and telling you things, and then much less people telling you what to do. Like he said, I think that's going to be really hard. People are going to be defiant. They're not going to want to listen, and that's going to make it even more disruptive. And there has been quite a bit of that over the 2 months. But I saw that white woman in Texas where she opened up her salon. It did look like some of the people there had masks on, but police came in. Nope. Shutting it down, carting you off to jail. And then they had the governor call in and release that white woman. Need our, that's another minority business owner, I guess you put that in quotes. Need our minority business owners. Got to get her out of greater confinement so she can go back out and serve the greater Texas community. I absolutely saw that. And that's another one that I would mean in terms of protesters. It's hard for me to imagine. So 200 black protesters in Florida over Mr. Arbery, let's say they don't even get tased and beaten. Let's just say that they get arrested. Same thing like this white woman in Texas. It's hard for me to imagine like Governor DeSantis putting a call in and being like, hey, those are my boys. They're all right. They weren't hanging out with Andrew Gillum or anything like that. That no, you know, hoodlum. These are good boys. They were out protesting. Good boys and gals. They were out protesting and doing something good. And I'm going to join a fun run for Mr. Arbery myself. So, yes, make sure you release all of them immediately and expunge their right. Like, I could be wrong. I'm still learning. But it's hard for me to imagine Governor DeSantis doing that for the folks in Florida. Anywho, the number 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks, comments, questions, folks are spectating and just hanging out, they can do so. If you have comments, questions, feel free.
I did send the report that I mentioned about with the murder, attempted murder. It happened in Key Largo, Florida.
That's my favorite movie. That is a great one.
Right.
Mr. Fuller talks
just
about
that. Just got through seeing it.
Lots of
just
great lessons.
Just got through seeing it about an hour ago.
Great one to check out. You have Netflix or what have you, Key. It is black and white, but yeah, it's a robbery. It's a heist. Everybody loves a good robbery. Bang, bang, white people with guns and shoot them up. And they got flagrant racism. Go out and blame it on some red people. You'll love it. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up.
Hello.
Irie in Louisiana.
Yes, I'm back again. I was thinking about this two call-ins ago, and I didn't get a chance to say it, but you know, it's part of their how they operate, their ethos, as some people would call it, or whatever, to rebel and to not adhere to order at all, from small to large, imperial, I guess you could call it, for lack of a better term, levels. They just, all they know is rebellion, and it's in the Constitution for them to rebel. If there's a government that they don't find fit, or they think is impeding on their, you know, their individual rights or group rights, and that's why, you know, we're seeing people, you know, doing these things, saying you can't actually tell me to do something even for my own good. I wanted to say at first that maybe that's because of what happened, well, what they did to themselves in Europe. But then again, time to time, they would rebel then too. So they just operate out of chaos at every turn. I just don't think they know another way. Two other things I found interesting. I delivered inhalable caffeine in some sort of pipette to a white woman. But I found it interesting that the FDA found the time, whenever they did, to say that caffeine is something you should put, you know, breathe in. That's incredible. And I'm wondering if anybody has started to see the Space Force recruitment ads. I just saw one. I think I reported that, you know, the recruitment ads are going up like more than ever, because I try to pay attention to that or whatever, but like they're already kind of like bumping up their recruitment ads for the regular military. Now they're Space Force. And just want to know if anybody else seen it. And I'll mute my line for the night. Thank you, everyone.
Wow. I have not seen that at all, but I will be alert to look for that. Has anyone seen that? Advertisements for the Space Force? Has anyone seen that? Don't be a spectator if you have. If you haven't spoken up and you have seen that, make sure you press *61. Has anyone seen those advertisements? I guess not. Okay. Well, be mindful, be alert if they are promoting such things in your area, and share. I'll get the other folks as well. The inhaling the caffeine. I mean, that's like right in line with the defiance, like Dr. Marimba Ani when she talked about Yorugu, like total out of balance. It can't just be sit down and, you know, have a little bit of tea. No. See if I can snort this. Like, what in the world? And then they turn around and call us, you know, you and your crack babies and all the rest of it. You know, your super predator children go out and terrorize the world. And they're snorting everything. While telecommuting. Those are the people right there doing all the going on Zoom and terrorizing everybody. Right there, sitting at home, snorting caffeine and all the rest of it. Like, man. Chemical people, that's one thing. Dr. Africa had that in his book, Chemical People. Let's see. Caller on the Skype line, I think also in Florida. Do you have additional commentary?
Yeah, yes, sir. I did see an advertisement for the Space Force.
Oh, so he's in Florida. Do you remember any of the details, what it was saying?
So it was saying, it started off with that, like, very inspirational kind of music, kind of quiet, and then they showed, like, images of the Earth, and, you know, they were doing the typical military thing where they ask, do you want a greater fulfillment in life? Do you want to help protect this nation? You should join the Space Force, and start showing pictures of Earth and, you know, saying that our ultimate destination is a different planet. It was so weird, like, I was so surprised. It was like a 30 to 40 second commercial. It was long.
Hmm. Wow. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. If anybody else has seen these advertised, now it'll be really interesting because advertising is, you know, it's niche advertising. That's what they have a lot of now. So when like sports come back on, like they were talking about in the news clips that I played, they were talking about going on to some of the black stations to make sure that they get information out about the virus. So is that going to be like niche promotion? Is that going to be something that they include, like basketball games where they have promos for the Space Force and football games and hip hop? Like, is it going to be programming where they know, like, ooh, a lot of black people, let's see if we can recruit some black people. We can put them in our space trials. And if you go out and get lost, right. Like, geez, and particularly with this, like, you've got the virus, so you got a lot of people that are financially in peril and all that, like, might be feeling desperate, like, well, Space Force, oh, maybe that, you know. I think the caller before had talked about them doing all these test sites have popped up, $25 for a nose swab and $100 for a blood sample. I would probably recommend avoiding that, like, race soldiers do enough stealing of our genetic material. Little Richard passed away this week, stealing everything, like our musical genius and genetic material, Henrietta Lacks. Like, it's already enough of that. I probably would not be voluntarily handing over my genetic material. Like, I know they can get a lot of us in very desperate straits, but yeah, like, I don't think there's enough trust to be participating in all of that at this point. Just my view. I know some folks do say that there need to be more black people who participate in scientific research and all of that. It would have to be participating with folks who have shown themselves trustworthy. Did other folks' commentary, especially if you saw the advertisement, make sure you speak up. Any other folks' observations, suggestions, comments?
Can I be heard again?
Retired firefighter in Florida?
Yes, it would not take place until May 15, but May 15 would mark the 50th anniversary of the shootings that took place at Jackson State University's campus. May 15, 1970, I believe. Where that took place on the campus by white race soldiers who worked for the state police that enacted the travesty. Mm-hmm. Back it'll be 50 years. It was overshadowed by that may be a metaphor. it did not get reported immediately because of the incident that took place at Kent State University a few days before, I believe, where white students were murdered by state police, I believe. No, a National Guardsman. But Jackson State University. At that time, it was still called Jackson College, I believe.
Yep. Very important event. Like, I've seen a lot of reports on the Kent State shooting, the anniversary of that this past week, where they talked about that and value of white life. But it'll be interesting to see if they have the same number of reports, same enthusiasm for the shooting at Jackson State. I do see an article at The Nation remembering the Jackson State tragedy. The violence wasn't caused by anti-war student protest. It was another chapter in the long history of state violence against African Americans. Got a lot of that right now, but Yes, great memory, very important to remember. That's what Kenneth Edmonds at the Times in North Carolina, I think their type of journalism was about, making sure we do not forget those type of events and even how that relates to the problem we are trying to solve right now. Any other comments, questions? Folks need to make sure they get in. We have like 5 minutes left in the broadcast. Uh-oh. We had a person who wrote in. Uh-oh. She says, please stay safe. I heard the broadcast on the mailboxes when I reported this week about being accosted going to check my mail, and wanted to say my mailboxes at my apartment complex were broken into, and they have pictures of the allegedly black thieves taped across the mailboxes now. Incredible. I am loving California. Incredible. I love California. Well, I can't say incredible, but they have cameras too. That's the other thing. They got cameras. Like, it's no need to be coming out with your Ginsu knives and all the rest of it. Like, you got your camera. Call the police. That's the appropriate procedure. Not, I'm looking for a confrontation. I got my brand new Sig Sauer, and I wish this coon would talk to me. That's what I talked about in the program, and that's what I think we have. That's another reason why it's probably a really good idea. Keep your children in the house. Keep yourself in the house if you don't have to be. You got white people snorting caffeine. They got new guns, and they are looking to practice racism. But you did say, yeah, mailbox was broken into and they got pictures of black thieves. And it might not even have been them. They might have just found some random black and said, oh, yeah, get that coon right there. Put their faces up on them. Anyway, much obliged. I hope everybody's mailbox is super safe. No hooligans out there trying to get into your packages. Anybody else have comments that they wanted to share? Grant, we should be here Tuesday, irregular time, 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central, 1 p.m. Pacific. Toyin Agbetu, he is in the United Kingdom. Be looking forward to getting information. What is happening in the UK? How are they responding to all of this? Reports about black people being impacted more so than whites in that part of the world. We'll tune in, see what he has to say this coming Tuesday. Again, the book club will still be here on Thursday, but Black Male in China should be back with us again. He predicted back in March that this was going to be bad for black people in the States. Also predicted that white people would be defiant and would not want to listen to people telling them what to do. But he should be here. Going to try and have him on later in the day. He was here the first time around. It was really early in the morning, and so I know a lot of folks, it was too early for them to listen live, but should be later in the day this time around, 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific, this coming Friday. I think that's the 15th. Yeah. So this Friday, tune in. Looking forward to getting an update what's happening in his part of the world, what he's been reading about what's happening here, thoughts on how this has played out. Folks can take advantage and, you know, ask some questions, folks in different parts of the universe. But that'll be Friday. And again, we should have our Global Sunday Talk on Racism back next Sunday, not tomorrow, but the Sunday following. So hopefully we should have lots of international perspective on this problem over the next 7 days. Help us get a more logical, more accurate understanding of what's happening so that we can make quality decisions. Everybody satisfied? We can call it a broadcast. Much obliged. At minimum, we'll be here on Tuesday. You can check Black Talk Radio Network, Facebook, the other outlets on social media for information when we will be broadcasting next. Stay safe. Lots of folks have said that. Stay safe. Take things seriously. Wash your hands. Avoid crowds. If you don't have to be out and about, I would not be out and about. drag racing, all kinds of madness. Armed whites, faux protests, and fun runs for Mr. Arbery. Stay in the house. You can get some reading done. You can get some cooking done, some breathing exercises. Drink your water. Take care of yourself. Take care of your immediate family, attempted family members, if you are with other folks. But do some self-care. Get lots of quality rest. That is really important. If you are feeling stressed and anxious, man, you do not want to be up all night watching Netflix and online and surfing this and that. Go to bed. Make every effort. Really try to see that you're not, you know, getting really crazy with your sleep schedule and sleeping, you know, all hours and up all hours. Like, really try to get quality rest. That is so important for our health and well-being. Nobody feels good when you are sleepy and fatigued and are not well rested. With that, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Fresh air, fresh water do wonders. Preserve that brain computer. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled every time we are in a vehicle, although we should be real strategic about, you know, being out and about right now. Lots of dangers. Just try to minimize going out and about. Be safe. Be strategic, be smart about things, even though I know it's warm. And, you know, if you need to get out to get some sunshine, that's great. I want to get out and get some sun. But definitely after the sun goes down, I would be at the residence. If you are going to go out, work, whatever it is, you make sure you have whatever you need. You are sober, buckled. You are not on the cell phone. We are not trying to attract any unnecessary attention from race soldiers, badge or no. Just trying to do the little things that we can. Take a jog, you know, that you can do that. But man, just try to be safe about things. I wouldn't participate in any of the fun runs, but be safe if you're going to get your vitamin D. Be safe if you're out and about, even in a vehicle. That disgracefulness with the race soldier who tried to run over that black family. The sickness is white supremacy. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
No problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.